Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
All right! Toronto! You feel good? All right then, listen. You know, we may be under clear blue skies, but you know, it's getting a little cool out tonight, but that ain't gonna stop us, because if we try hard enough, we're gonna get this place. I said we're going to get this place! How did it help?
Hey! What makes a man? Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Now you're a man, a man, man, man. Now you're a man, a manny, manny, man, a man, man, man. You are now a man, you're a man. Now you're a man. Live it! What makes a man? Is it the woman in his arms? Just cause she has big titties? Or is it the way he fights every day? No, it's probably the titties.
There's no finer way to start a Friday. It is 23 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of August in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along and making a part of your listening day. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, this, my friends, is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us today. It's 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be part of today's program, 503-505-6964, and I think it is absolutely worth noting at this point that I have not one, not two, but I think 94 different Paul Stanley cuts. It's not just one thing. It's more than just the.
All right!
I mean, that's, you know, there's no reason you don't want to start with that. But I got 94 of those. I could do one of those every single day. It would take us 4.5 months to use them all, and some of them are long. Lengthy exhortations from Mr. Stanley about your need to either raise your hands for rock, give yourself a round of applause, to let him know if you enjoy a taste of alcohol, or any other things. I think we might start doing one of those a day just for my own amusement, if nothing else. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is Friday, so thank you for coming along. Glad that you are out there. Here's what's coming up today. Geek Watch on the way. Taser Watch on the way. We have a Job Watch coming up today. We'll be doing a top five, Dawn Taylor's top five songs which she uses to turn her frown upside down. Tell me if I've got this right. These are the top five songs that you use to change your mood, to put yourself in a good mood when you're feeling bad, to pick you up when you're feeling down, to make you high when you're feeling oh so low.
Right now, yeah. I mean, it changes, but currently these are the top five songs that I go, man, I'm in a crappy mood, and then I end up flipping to those on the iPod.
Now, is this something that you? How do I put this? Is this a list that you were just able to quantify and discern for yourself because you had need of them recently?
Well, yeah, I was feeling a little cranky this morning, and I was sitting in the kitchen while Greg and Sarah were in here doing Fun Employment Radio.
It's hard to believe that you could be cranky.
I know. I am such a cheerful, happy person.
You're a ray
person.
Of sunshine. You're the embodiment of sweetness and light. You're the distillation of cheer, Dawn.
I'm puppies and rainbows.
Yes, you are. Is that Leslie Gore?
That's Sunshine and Lollipops.
Sunshine and Lollipops. All right. So later
sunshine,
on the day.
Sunshine, lollipops, and
well, don't,
rainbows.
Don't see.
Everywhere.
You do that, it's going to be stuck in my head all day.
When
you don't. No. You can't do that because then it's going to be lodged in my brain. Because if you do that, I swear to God, I'll bring back the Use Your Heart as a Telephone song. I'll do. Where is it? Where's my Kevin Blechdom? No. That's no. All right. Well, in any event, you know what I've had in my head all day is Waterloo by ABBA. You know the song Waterloo?
Oh, yes, I do.
I'm a
That's
big fan.
That's unfortunate.
No, it's not. It's glorious. And it's going to be more glorious later on this hour when I share it with everyone else by force. So that's going to be coming up later on the day. ABBA, you can just make a note of yourself. If you ever attempted to step away or to tune out or you say to yourself, Rick, I know you broadcast live, but I mean, what really is the... Why would I need to listen now as opposed to late? Because every minute that you delay listening to the show is a minute you delay listening to ABBA. Hearing the pure crystalline glory. Of their Swedish harmonies just piped right into your ears. So you don't want to deny yourself that. Geek Watch on the way. Taser Watch, Job Watch, Dawn Taylor's top five songs that she uses to cheer herself up. Plus, we're gonna watch, and by we, I mean all of us. All of us together as one, like a class. It'd be like one of those times when your teacher has a hangover and doesn't want to talk about, like an English class, doesn't want to talk about whatever's in the textbook. So she just brings in Romeo and Juliet, and you watch that. So this is going to be like that. Except we're all going to watch a movie trailer, and it's a movie trailer that went online, I think, sometime yesterday, and the studios have spent the better part of the intervening 24 hours trying to get it taken off the internet. To no avail, by the way. Anything they did, doesn't matter, because I've got it. So it's awesome. And I know that Cheryl sent you the link to it. Do you know if the link still works?
I will check and see.
Because here's the thing, but you're forbidden to actually watch it.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that it works, because here's the thing. If the link actually works, then what I'll do is I'll stick it up on the website so we can all watch it as one, as a people, and so forth. If you would like to join us via the telephone today, you can do that. It's, what the hell is it? It's 503-505-6964. That's what it is. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com or dawn@rickemerson.com. And the chat box is... I always say that the chat box is up and running, but the truth is I don't really know because I don't monitor it. I don't... it's not like I'm trying to avoid it. It's not like I'm not trying to... You know, like I don't want to interact with the people. It's that it can only really be on one computer at a time, and it's on Dawn's computer.
And so, really, you don't want to be distracted by it. You don't want to know.
No. I just assume not know what people are typing. Because I'm going to assume that it's just them... That it's just them correcting the 1,001 ways in which I am wrong about something, like every single day. You know, every observation I make about anything that has to do with science or math or facts or knowledge.
Yeah. And there's always a lot of, you know, you go, Don, you're awesome.
Don't take that from him, he's an ass.
You give him what for, that sort of thing.
A lot
of support for me in the chat box.
Well, that's great. Well, good for you.
And yes, that clip does seem to be working.
All right, so. Can you do me a favor? Can you do me a favor? Can you post that on my Facebook page?
I don't think I can.
Yeah, you can just as a person, just as a you know.
Just as I share this link with you or something.
Yeah, but just to make a post about it, you know.
Yeah, but it won't be on your Facebook. It'll be on my Facebook.
No. If you go to my Facebook page and just do it as a comment, can't you write something on my wall?
Oh, yeah. I guess I could do it as a wall post.
That's what I was saying. It's just only because I'm trying to do the opening. I've got all these buttons to press in front of me, Dawn.
You're busy. Okay.
I've got to be... If I'm not here, who's going to press the... button? And I mean, that's going to be my new ringtone, by the way. I'm going to make that the ringtone for something or other. And I know I always say that, usually about this... And it didn't really ever happen. I was going to make that my text message alert for a while, just because that's a, you know... Then people will be aware of how unbelievably popular I am with texting folk. You know, if you're just sitting in a restaurant, and every time somebody's trying to order a salad, it's getting interrupted by... they'll say, my God, who is that high-powered man across from me? He seems to be the belle of the ball. Everyone wants to share thoughts with him. That'd be even more obvious and pronounced if I was using... Instead of, So what I'm saying is that instead of... I would be using...
Are you trying to make my head hurt?
Yes, I am.
I'm wearing my new headphones, and you're just trying to make my head hurt.
How's it working? Okay. And so forth. This is all true. It's 503-505-6964. So that's all in the way. Plus, I got a fantastic story. And by fantastic, I mean painful for somebody who's not you. And that makes it wonderful. So it sort of slingshots around the sun and becomes a great story because it happened to someone else. I'm just going to say this. Let's see. Dawn, from this story, do you want to hear phrase number one or phrase number two?
Number two.
Sacramento Burn Center. There you go. Right there. That's how you know it's quality. So we're going to get to that here in just a moment. And whatnot. Dawn Taylor is tracking the following stories for you on this Friday.
Environmentalists are outraged over a dump on Hayden Island. A dead driver gets a parking ticket in Seattle.
Yeah.
And a man's life is saved by his dog chewing off his toe.
Seems unlikely, but what do I know? All right, then. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program again. It's 503-505-6964 and whatnot. And just before we do anything else, I'm just out of the gate, now that we've teased the news, and before we talk about what we did last night, let me just read a couple of these emails. Yes?
Do you want me to post this to Rick Emerson or to the Rick Emerson show?
No, to Rick Emerson. To Rick Emerson.
To Rick Emerson.
I know that there's more than one Facebook page out there, and it's very confusing. That's why I ignore the one that says Rick Emerson show. I mean, that's Cheryl. I'm not saying everybody should ignore it. I'm saying it's just too much stuff to update it. I don't post anything of that one, just because otherwise then it becomes difficult to explain to people which one it is. And you have your brow is furrowed like you don't know how to, like you're not quite sure what you're doing.
Well, there's some things I don't ever do, and like one is write something on somebody's wall.
Oh,
I don't know how to do that.
It's for the love of God, I'll do it. Never mind. Just don't you worry your pretty little head. I'll take care of it. Don't you worry about it. Big Daddy Rick will post that for you, Don. I'll get that taken care of over here. All right. Well, let me just
actually, I just got a little message in the corner that says Thomas Gill made you an administrator at the page The Rick Emerson Show.
Well, great.
So I can
swell.
So I can do that.
All right. Well, wonderful. All right. Well, let me just read these then. While you're posting that, let me just read these two emails because they're both about the same thing. And while I admire the spirit, the gusto, the gumption, the moxie behind these emails, and I appreciate that the people have a love of language and the people have a love of words and they like to hear those things used correctly. And so they want to correct those who they believe are speaking poorly. This is not one of those times. This is one of those times when people are correcting me about something about which I am not incorrect. Two in a row here. Here's email the first. Subject line, orientated. Rick, orientated, much like planful, isn't a word. Just trying to help. And then parenthetically, if it were accurate, you would say, and failing. Tony. All right, so there you go. That's email number one. Email number two. This is from Legion of News, or I guess I said it as well. Legion of News, Tuesday. Rick, you used the word orientated regarding a dog brain. I have always felt this was a random made-up word because it seems to mean pretty much the same thing as oriented. So, Mr. Wordsmith, he says with barely concealed contempt and sarcasm, why do you use orientated rather than oriented? However, then you pitch a, quote, hissy fit... A hissy fit about moisturize rather than moisten. Pleased to be addressing this pressing question. Hey, I like the sort of assonance you're using there with the addressing the pressing question. That's sort of great. That's a little Eminem thing you got going on there. Well, my thing about moisturize and moisten is like my thing about crispy and crisp. They're actually two different things. Moisturize is just sort of an amusing thing to me because it's like they just took a word that already existed, which is moisten, and then they just made it all space-agey by putting a Z in it. That's one of those, like, you know, it's just one of those, like, World of Tomorrow things. Where to moisten is to moisturize. They're the same thing. It's just one has a sort of, like, you know, science on the move sort of a thing to it. The thing about crispy and crisp, that's just, and I'm not saying I don't use the word crispy. I do. I'm just saying I recognize, it's not even that it's not a word. It just, it's like overwording, because it means the same thing as crisp. You are overwording. You know what I'm saying? Do you see the irony there? I'm making up a word to describe the making up of a word. Something you'd like to share with the people, Don?
No. I'm just enjoying myself over here.
If you say that you're...
my little corner.
If you're saying you're eating a cookie that is particularly crisp, there is no difference to say that it's crispy. They're the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like using an extra syllable when it doesn't really need to be there. And I know that I use a lot of extra syllables every single day of my goddamn life. I'm just saying. I'm just making the observation. Back to Mr. John and Tony. The reason I use orientated, even though it's not a word, is because it is a word. So, and it doesn't mean the same thing as oriented. Oriented, in the traditional usage, using their primary definitions, are you looking up orientated in the dictionary right now?
I am.
All right. It's an intransitive state of existence, in case you're wondering. It can be an adjective or a verb, depending on its form. It dates to 1848. Oriented, traditionally speaking, if you're using the primary definition... I'll actually start the other way around. Orientated means your physical location and proximity to another object.
Certainly, it's much more commonly used in British English.
Yeah, it's
well.
British English is a funny thing to say. So if you're in a room and you're facing west, that is your orientation. You are orientated, you know, in such a way that you are facing west. If you're, you know, to become oriented with something, though. And I know there's that whole thing where orient means the east and whatever. The way we traditionally use the word, to be oriented with something is to be familiar with something. So one is a physical state of being most of the time. One is a state of existence in terms of your familiarity with or knowledge of something. I say this, by the way, not to pick on Tony and John, but because I get many, 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 like a really a disproportionate number of people who accuse me, like with sort of barely concealed glee, of using a made-up or, you know, like a non-existent word when I say orientated. So there you go.
Well, now, given what orient, oriented, and orientated all mean, how from this do we get orientation?
What do you mean?
Which is...
it's a conflation. That's the thing.
In the use of that, we say that you have to go to...
An orientation
where... You have to sit and you're being, you know, schooled on something orientation.
Maybe it's like a default thing, because what other suffix would you use? An orientation?
I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. Maybe it's because they can't think of anything. Maybe it's because everything else they would use sounds weird. Because if you were going to be oriented into something or become oriented, it would be like an orientation. But that doesn't, so that totally sounds like a fake word. Mm. That doesn't make sound. So I think maybe they use orientation because there's no other suffix that works properly. So I don't really know. So this isn't like one of those forte things where it's like I feel the need to point out to correct people all the time. Because, you know, who really cares? But I'm just saying, because
Forte does sound more correct, even though it is not correct.
Well, it's just people don't use it. It is a word. They just don't use it properly.
Right.
So it's one of those things. I really am doing this as a public service, because I see a lot of people seem to be under the illusion that it's not even a word. And I want them to know that they're free to use it. And then to live a life of spiritual fulfillment. It's 503, or not. You know, it's 503-505-6964. What else are we going to do? Oh, so last night, we were going to talk about what we did last night. And what I did last night is, I don't even know. First of all, if I sound a little loopy today, it's because I had this whole thing where I got to bed, not to lament that my I don't want to take up valuable airtime bitching about stuff that only matters to me. So I was up really late, and then I got up really early because of something that I had to do that was then canceled this morning, which is good news, bad news, because the good news is you're like, thank God, I don't have to do it. But then the bad news is...
Are you going to tell us what it was?
I'm so unsure how to proceed about this. Because I don't want to sound as though I'm being deliberately coy. That's the thing. I don't want to sound like a Page 6 item from the New York Post. I don't want to be like, you know, something that would be tantalizing to everyone if only I told you. It is, I guess, maybe not a secret because it was in the Wyoming Week that I have this book project that I've been working on and that is approaching, marching onward toward publication. We'll say that. I was supposed to have a conversation with the editor and it was supposed to be, but you know, it's all, you know, It's all on the East Coast there. It's all back east. And I'm out west. And so it's the thing where everything has to happen at, you know, like 7:30 in the morning my time. And I know that there's a million people who like are already at work by 7:30. So that's why I'm not asking for sympathy. Because I get up pretty late and that's fine. But I was prepping for it last night and making some notes. So I was, and then I did that stupid thing where I started watching Justified. And I was, and I told myself that lie that you did. I'll watch half of it. And that there's no half.
No.
There's no watching half of that show or any show. Who am I fooling? That's like when I'll have one more beer. There's no, you know, no. It was smoke half the vial of crack. So I was up really late working on this stuff for the editor. And then I started watching the show. I'm like, I'll turn it off at the 20-minute mark. No. So I get to bed at like 4:30. I get up at 7 because I got to be ready for the call at 8. And then I wander out, and thank God I checked my BlackBerry at some point, like, you know, and it was the editor, Rick, have to postpone phone call. Sorry, do later, bye, right, you know, editor, you know, done. And I'm like, all right, fine. And so then it's like, well, am I going to stay up or am I going to go back to bed? And I'm like, well, okay, I'm going to go back to bed. And fortunately, I hadn't had any caffeine, hadn't ingested, you know, wasn't awake, hadn't ingested any sort of, stimulation of my body, so I was fine. But then I go back to bed, and at some point, in the last 6 months, I have become Mrs. Howell from Gilligan's Island because it gets very bright outside very early where our bedroom is orientated, it's facing the sun. And so,
is it facing east?
Maybe.
See, then it would definitely, it would be oriented.
It's literally in two ways it would be oriented. But I have this thing of like, I have the sleeping mask that I put on.
Of course you do.
And is there something funny about that?
No.
There is. Because it's gay. It's completely gay. There's this thing. It's like I'm not under any illusions. It's not. It's gay. It's the gayest thing ever.
Is it satin?
It's not satin. It's a little satiny. just the side that touches my delicate eyelids. The outside is blue. It's manly. It's not like it's pink or something, or that it has like, you know, lacy trim around it or whatever. Okay.
But do you slip into your mules when you have to go answer the door?
No, I don't. I do have a parasol that I use when I walk the dog so as not to burn my delicate skin. Anyway, it gets very bright in the bedroom. And here's the thing, and I was unemployed, and I didn't want to get up before noon. Why would I? Unemployed? I'm sleeping in. But during the summertime, we don't have heavy curtains. We just have the, like, Venetian blinds, and I'm too cheap to buy curtains because I'm a huge tightwad. I am, like, the biggest cheapskate on earth. So it's cheaper just to buy like a $1.99 sleeping mask because curtains, Dawn, as you know, are expensive.
They are.
That's like $30 just to buy a cheap set. That mask, $2 at Walgreens.
Yeah. Thanks.
So I put on the sleeping mask and then I can sleep until it's dark again. But the thing is, now after like 6 months, I have become incapable of sleeping or in fact going back to sleep without the mask. So I get up this morning and it's like that thing, if you walk over, you go, well, where the hell? It was. And you know that feeling that it was just here, that sort of frustration. And it's like Lawrence is like, I can't wake her up, and I can't be like rooting around under the covers because then the dogs will wake up, you know. Because the dogs, of course, they all, you know, the thing is, you know, you tell them to stay in a certain place, but you wake up and they're there. It's just how it goes. You wake up and they've moved in, and they're creatures of habit. And if I wake them up, then they're going to need food. Then they're going to have to go outside. And then I will be so hopelessly awake that I'll just be up. And it's like 7:30. Mm-hmm. So then it's like I'm trying to find the sleeping mask. And it just becomes a whole thing. So, yes?
Nothing.
Nothing else you'd like to share?
No, not really.
Anyway, so that was my morning.
I will say, though, I understand the sleeping mask thing because I had to start using earplugs because my husband was a snorer. And his snoring is not as bad as it used to be, but now I can't sleep without the earplugs because now I hear every single damn little sound.
You are acclimated to them.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Well, you know, it's like, you know, what else, you know, we have in the bedroom is we have one of those white noise generators, which is like the best creation on earth. And by the way, if people can make fun of me all they want and say that I'm like, you know, that it's like some lame, you know, SkyMall, you know, purchase. I don't give an F. That thing, you know, and it's just sort of the in the background. It's awesome.
But that's another thing, though, that's completely addictive.
Yeah,
it's like
because
if you
can't
start
live
using,
without it.
If you start using fan, in the summertime, you get the nice breeze and the white noise
and the sound.
And then when you try to like not use it anymore, now it's winter. It's like 40 degrees. you know, in your bedroom, you're freezing, but you have to keep using the fan because you can't sleep without it because of the damn white noise.
And in fact, during the summer, it's twice as bad later because we're running the white noise and the air conditioner, and which I run until it gets to below 70 degrees. I mean, it's like as soon as it hits 71 outside, the air conditioner goes on in my house. And but to the point that we actually now, this is how lame and pampered we are. As this is how like I can, how much I can never complain about my life. I have two white noise generators. I have the one that's regular size, and then I have the sharper, the little sharper image one that is like the travel one. Because then you go to a hotel, and it just seems so. It's like being in a sarcophagus. It's like being in a tomb.
I have one of those, and yeah, every time we go anywhere, I have to bring my little white noise thing.
The secret, by the way, if you don't have a white noise generator, and if you don't want to run the shower all night, which is what I used to do, is to put the radio between stations on the FM band, and you get like a sort of thing.
Accidentally turn the white noise thing onto like jungle sounds Foghorn. Or whatever it's got. They have one that's just like, aha, aha, and there's birds chirping and like.
Why would you want that?
I don't know why anyone would want that.
Is that like if you were raised by Remus or something and you just, you know, I just don't feel at home with it.
The ocean waves one is kind of nice, but the thing with the bird noises and stuff, I don't get that.
That's for when Greystoke can't get to sleep. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the thing. I don't even know what to talk about. Oh yeah, so that's just for the sleeping mask, blah, 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 blah. And it was just, I was going to tell this whole thing about my night last night. It was just, all I'll say is this.
You were hobnobbing.
I was, yeah, but it's just like.
You were being a big shot.
But see, that's the thing is that like, do you ever have this thing where like people somehow are, and if, you know, you work in radio, you sort of get to know this sensation. Because as I've always said, you know, I stole this from Don Geronimo. I've said this a billion times. We're basically just rodeo clowns. But it's like other people don't seem to know that sometimes. Like if you work in radio, you know you're not famous. You know you're not a celebrity. You know you're not really important. But it's like other people sometimes don't realize that. And they will treat you as though you actually matter. And so he's on the radio. He's important. And it's like, it really like could not be less important what I do. This job, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to be artificially humble about it. I really not. I'm not trying to be falsely. I mean, we're charging people to listen, so it's like it would be retarded of me to go, like, it's stupid. It doesn't. I'm just saying, like, there's guys who cure cancer, or maybe not. Maybe that's a bad example, because there aren't those guys. But, you know, but
there are people who do, like, heart surgery on children.
You know, my wife works with veterans every day. She works with, literally, with crippled veterans. And I sit here and I talk about a thing going, ca-ca, you know, next to me on the bedside table, that, you know, and a sleeping mask, you know, and having to get up at the ungodly hour 7 to talk to the editor of my book. It's this job in the grand scheme of things isn't really important in the traditional sense. And even if it were, that doesn't mean that I am important in the traditional sense. But there's just people who don't really, they don't get that. And they sort of, and they will act as though I am some actual person of note. So last night, I guess I can talk about this. I don't think it was a secret. I mean, it was not a public event, but I mean, it was a thing. It was a thing that happened. So this guy, James Wesby, who is a film director, he directed a movie called The Auteur. He made a movie called The Auteur, and he did one called Film Geek, which I haven't seen, actually, and I've always been told that I should see it.
Well, Film Geek is a lot of fun. It's really good.
I haven't seen Film Geek. I've seen The Auteur. He also did the Storm Large's My Vagina is 8 miles Wide. He did that video. He did the Storm Large video.
What was
video.
That word again?
Vagina. It's the one. It's the song where I say, vagina, vagina, vagina. It's that. He directed that video. But he's been a fan of the show for a long time. And I guess he wrote Film Geek while he was working as a delivery guy, and was a big listener to the show. And so he and I've sort of kept in touch. He's been on Outlet Portland a few times.
And when he was a delivery guy, he worked with my husband briefly.
You said that, and then he actually there was a little crossover period there.
Yeah.
So he's got this new movie, and this is, I guess, not a movie called Rid of Me, and Storm's in that. She's not really the star, but she's in that, and Katie O'Grady's in it, and some other folks. So he was doing a little focus group, a little screening of it last night. And it was just, and you've been to focus groups, where it's like they show it, and it's not done. It's not finished. There's like, it's a temp score, and it's not color corrected, but we want to get, you know, just your thoughts on it. So he invited, you know, and he asked Courtney Hameister from Livewire to quote, you know, get some smart people to come see this. And then I guess they were all gone because she emailed me. She's like, hey, James wants to know if you'll come to the film. And I'm like, fine. And fortunately, I was wearing basically what I'm wearing now, which is like a black T-shirt and jeans. But fortunately, in the sort of artist world, you know, or whatever, that kind of counts as dressing up or dressing appropriately, which is lucky because I just thought it was going to be like in a guy's basement. You know, I thought it was going to be like when you go to Bobby's house or something. And it's like in his tool shed or whatever. You know, it's like it's nice. There's a screen. It's whatever. But it's like, you know, you, but you're basically in the place where his rototiller stays the rest of the year. No, this is, I go to, so I'm just following the address. I don't bother to look at where the event's actually taking place. I just see the address written down, and it's at the Hotel Deluxe, as it turns out. And there's a guy holding the glass door open for me when I get there, which is how I know I'm in a place where I don't belong. And I walk in, and it's just like this really plush, you know, joint. And immediately I'm just like, I shouldn't be here. Everyone is thin and sparkly. You know, they're what Tom Wolfe would call social X-rays. They're just these miniature people who are just made of pipe cleaners and money, and cologne, and they're just in there. Which is not to say that they're bad folks. They're like way more beautiful and important than I am. You know, and I'm just seeing people from like actual movies. You know, like his other films that have made like real movies that they didn't like. You know. Things that they didn't do on, like, a budget of $9 and food stamps or whatever. Lana Vinker's there, you know, from Lana Vinker Casting.
Yeah.
You know, and just looking all glamorous and whatever. And, just, you know, and it's just it's a whole, you know. And then, but then, of course, and then Courtney's there. And, you know, Courtney's great. And Courtney's wonderful. And she's, you know, she herself is very glamorous and funny and smart and beautiful and whatever. Who else is there, though? Who else is there? I will give you a hint. It is the one other person who... How do I put this? Because I don't mean this in a bad way. I'm at this screening thing for the James Westby film. Who is the one other person who is there who maybe is a little bit of an odd, loudish sort of peg in the social hole?
Byron?
Byron Beck. And I didn't even see him so much as I felt his hands grabbing my buttocks, like right after. And the thing is, and you realize that maybe not everybody else understands the Byron dynamic. And I'm there talking to like Lana or somebody. I'm like, so it's, and she's like, so have you seen the film? And I said, no, I'm trying to sound intellectual. No, I'm doing exactly what I did on the Leverage set, trying to sound continental. Well, I hear that he's using a Panaflex lens for this movie or whatever the hell I'm saying. And then immediately I just feel this as Byron's hands clenched down on my ass. And I turn, oh, hello, it's someone grabbing my buttocks. Oh, it's Byron Beck. Anyway, so I don't even know what my point here was, except to say that it was a great film. It's a very good film. And he gives the whole thing, but it's not finished, but it was great. And, you know, and then afterward, talking to all of these immensely talented people, and then just looking for the first opportunity to leave because I just felt so unbelievably ugly and spongy. Mm. So, anyway, so that was my night. And then I went home, and... I went home and I ate Triscuits with bacon and cheddar spray cheese. I suck. I have all right. Hello, Don. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. I was going to ask your advice on something up until I heard that whole story. But your evening was so much more glamorous than mine.
What was your advice? What's the advice you're going to ask?
I have my monthly book club with.
I'm glad you said something after I have my monthly, because otherwise it was just going to be all.
It's the Mormon book club, which I keep saying Mormon book club. It's
books by Mormons or read by Mormons.
No, most of the members of the book club are Mormons.
Yes. Okay.
So, lovely people. We get together and we always have food.
Right.
And it goes on a theme. And so we read this book this month called The Magician's Assistant by an author named Anne Patchett. And so the person who chose the book decided the food theme should be food that has an assistant, which I
don't understand.
Well, you know, I don't really either, but I was going to do pigs in blankets.
Yes. Okay.
You know, the little
right.
tiny hot dogs.
Pancakes and sausage.
Right. And then I found out that somebody else was making hot dogs. So they're grilling hot dogs.
Does it have to have and in the name?
Well, no, but it's a sort of a food that
comes with something
comes
else.
Comes with another food. So
all
then
right, okay.
I was going to make macaroni and cheese.
All right.
But it was just really warm in my apartment last night, and I just didn't feel like cooking. So
all
I
right.
didn't do it. So now I'm going to be doing the show with you, and then I basically have just enough time to sort of get something. I don't have time to really make anything elaborate to get something before I like drive to Beaverton this evening to go to book
club. So you're wondering what a Mormon food is that you should bring. Does
no,
it have to it be a Mormon
no,
food?
No, it doesn't have to be a Mormon food.
I was going
to
say.
I mean,
you know,
most foods really aren't Mormon foods, although I had never had the illustrious funeral potatoes until book club.
Have they given you a nut cup?
No, I've never
That sounds
had
like
a
something
nut cup.
Crude, but it's not. It's ask him about if they've ever been to a Mormon wedding. Ask him about nut cups. Yeah, I don't know a food that comes with something else, like a something and something.
Yeah,
I'm the wrong person to ask, unfortunately.
I mean,
have no
I guess,
idea.
I guess ultimately any food that has multiple parts could be, you know, getting an assistant for that. I have to admit, I thought about just going to like one of the fancy cupcake places and buying some cupcakes.
Well, that doesn't really count, though. That's like, that doesn't work the way a pigs and blankets thing.
I know.
Where it really works. I don't know. Maybe, well, yeah, I don't know. We'll get a, perhaps we'll get somebody weighing in on that.
Yeah.
I can't.
Because now
help
I'm
you.
Stymied, and really, I only have, you know, I'm going to have to like go to Trader Joe's and buy something or something. I don't know what to do.
I have nothing. In no way can I help you.
And it's hard because I, you know, am actually, you know, a fairly decent cook. And so
I don't want to look like an untalented stooge.
Well, yeah, and I pretty much have set the bar fairly high for myself, you know, in the past by bringing.
And so if you bring something
really
that sucks,
things.
You'll be like, well, her moment of glory is over.
Yeah.
How the mighty have fallen.
Somebody suggesting vegetables and dip.
No. That's a bad suggestion. No, that's because that's not a food. That's a. That's not a course. You know, really, as such. No, I don't know. I have nothing. Wait,
I could go over to Kettleman's and I could get some of the little bagels, and maybe some of the really good, like, spread, you know, schmear that
sure.
they do or something.
What? But,
see, I don't know.
What is it? Is that a real Yiddish word, or is that
schmear.
One of those? Is that like schwag, like a word that Gentiles have created, that doesn't really exist because they want to sound Yiddish?
That
if you can't, as Tommy Ziegler would say, don't try to rock the Yiddish unless you can really bring it. It just doesn't really work. I got nothing.
I have no idea.
All right, then. It's
so you were no help to me at all.
No, not what you didn't think I would be. You were asking me a food question. Was I really going to be like, Don, here's what you want to do.
I could bring Triscuits and spray cheese.
Yeah, but the best part is that you actually asked me the food question after I told you that I spent yesterday eating Triscuits and spray cheese. I mean, come on. So, all right, there you go. Well, let's just do this. Without further ado, ladies and gentlefolk, we've got a lot coming up today. Top five songs Dawn Taylor uses to put herself back in a happy, zestful mood. Geek Watch, Taser Watch, Job Watch, and here in just a bit, we'll watch the worst movie trailer ever made by human hands. This, though, is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
A Seattle police parking enforcement officer left a parking ticket on a vehicle Tuesday, unaware that the person whom she thought was sleeping in the driver's seat was actually dead.
Wah, wah.
Seattle police said the officer was patrolling Airport Way South at about 9:30 a.m., marking vehicles at the two-hour parking zone. At 12 p.m., the officer returned and found a vehicle in violation. She noticed a man who appeared to be asleep in the driver's seat. The officer knocked on the window to try and wake the man. When he wouldn't wake up, she determined he was just a sound sleeper and put a $42 ticket on the windshield and left. About 40 minutes later, officers were flagged down by the man's girlfriend, who had found the vehicle using GPS. She and another person found the car with the 36-year-old man still inside. Medics were called to the scene and pronounced the victim dead. The medical examiner will determine the cause of death, but detectives say there's no sign of homicidal violence. It's believed he died several hours before the parking enforcement officer was out marking vehicles. The $42 parking ticket has been voided.
So he was just sort of, hey, you know what? I got a ticket the other day, and never mind. I don't even want to talk about it. It's gonna put me in a bad mood. I'm gonna put a pin in this, and we'll have the discussion about this on Monday. I have this whole thing with a ticket that I don't even want to get started on because it's just gonna become a whole thing, and I don't want it to become a whole thing, frankly.
No.
So all right, here's Dawn Taylor.
Well, let's do our Darwin Watch.
All right. Just give me one second here because I'm posting. I'm not posting the link quite yet, but I'm getting this link ready to post.
Okay.
All right. So there we go. This is the link for one of the worst movie trailers. It's so unbelievably bad is the thing. It's bad in so many hundreds of ways that you almost don't think it can be real. I mean, it's just it's mind-numbingly bad. I'm not overselling it, by the way. So just FYI. All right, let's see. What is this? A Darwin watch? Is that what we're doing?
This is our Darwin watch.
All right,
sort of a holdover from.
Hour. Okay, so this is actually is this the story that we had last hour
yes.
that we said we were like, hey, we gotta hold this over to the Rick Emerson show because this is because it's glorious.
Indeed, it is.
Because it really sums up, and I didn't think initially this was a Darwin watch, but it sort of becomes apparent like about halfway through that that's what this is. Your Darwin watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Another one bites the dust.
Another one bites the dust.
And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust.
Hell.
Ow! My heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
Here's your Darwin Watch for Friday.
An 81-year-old man was killed when he was trapped underneath a riding lawnmower at his home in Bullskin Township, Fayette County, Pennsylvania.
That's a bad way to go.
Police said the man, identified as Elmer Slonecker, was riding up a hill Monday on Franklin Road when the mower rolled over. His death has been ruled an accident. According to his daughter, she stopped the car and was looking for him, saw his arm sticking out, and she says, "I just started hollering and screaming and blowing on the horn." Slonecker was a stubborn man.
Well, she was blowing on the horn. For what? What is she doing that for? Like, he might have fallen asleep under the blades?
You know, she wanted to get someone's attention to come and help get him out. I don't know.
Come and save this hand.
I think you see a man who's dead sticking out from under a riding lawnmower, you know.
You view things differently.
There's not a lot of precedent for that, really.
I was just thinking, you know, the only precedent for that is in the book Misery, which is how the sheriff goes out. In the movie, she shoots him. In the book, I think she runs over him, and there's, quote, a strange liquefying noise, end quote. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, Slonecker was a stubborn man, according to his daughters, and refused their repeated requests to stop using the riding mower on his hilly property, where they said the machine had already rolled on several occasions. "We've offered to do so many things for him," his daughter said, "and he wanted to do it himself, didn't want to bother anybody. We've had people volunteer, but Dad wouldn't do it." The family said that the mower got stuck at the base of a hill, and Elmer Slonecker went to the top and tied a rope to a second lawnmower.
This is really where it takes the hairpin turn into Darwin territory.
And tried to hoist the first one up.
How'd that work out?
Well, the upper mower apparently slipped and rolled down the hill with him on it.
Apparently. So there you go. And there's like a Jack and Jill sort of a thing that if I'd had this story maybe last night and I could have sat at home and just worked on it for a bit and just maybe constructed some sort of a rhyme or a limerick or whatever, but... no. All right. Hey, is today the 9th? Today is not the 9th.
Today is the
Monday the
9th.
First of all, I think yesterday I said it was the 9th, but also...
Monday is the 9th.
Monday the 9th, I believe... I can't swear to this. I think we're going to try to have our... Do you know a guy named Jim Willig?
No.
I don't know why this occurred to me just now. I don't know why. This has popped into my head. Well, let me just end the Darwin Watch, and I'll tell you why we're going to have him in and so forth. There's your Darwin Watch.
Another one bites the dust.
Don't.
Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
Before I do anything else, though, before we move on, take one other single solitary step before I talk about this the thing with Jim Willig, who a lot of you know as Big Jim.
Yeah,
you know, Big
Jim.
He was on the Marconi Show.
Yes,
and, then he was,
I know Big Jim.
I think we're going to have him in maybe next week. Here's the question. I know that I never thought I would be asking this. When is Gilbert Gottfried going to be here? Not here in the studio.
I think he already
was it
been
tonight?
And gone.
No. But I don't think so. I think it was like tonight, maybe. Or he's coming back then. He might then be coming back. Unless I'm reading an old because on Facebook there's that thing where it threads the messages. So I might be reading an old message and thinking it's now. Anyway, so Jim either opened for or will be opening for Gilbert Gottfried when he comes to the Aladdin.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, that's not why we're gonna have him. We're gonna have him just because he's a good guy. But it's one of those things I wanted to mention. But I could be wrong. I could have been reading an earlier iteration. Part of our message thread that could have already taken place. You think that I would sort of file away under important items to note that Gilbert Gottfried was going to be in town, but amazingly,
well,
I did not.
He was here on July 16th.
Is it possible that he's coming back for a second engagement?
I don't know. Well, he was here as part of that whole Stripperland movie thing that Richard
Bristol.
Damn!
See, now I have to. Now I have to look.
He's going to be back on August 14th.
Maybe that's when it's going to be happening. Let me see here. Yeah, here we go. He says I will be opening. Currently, I shouldn't even read the first part of this. It's just hilarious, though. It's Portland in a microcosm. Currently, I work as a porn clerk, but I will be opening for Gilbert Gottfried on August 14th.
That's if show I just, business.
It's also Portland. If I had a nickel for every person I knew that was a porn clerk in this town, probably 80% of my acquaintances have worked at a porn store at some point in their lives. And probably 90% of the people I know in radio have worked at a porn store. There's some sort of a weird... It's like in Rounders when Totoro is always, getting the guys a job driving the truck. It's like in radio, You know, it's at some point a friend will get you a job at a porn store. Anyway, so we're going to have him on. Before we talk about anything else, though, and before we do any more of these stories, before we talk about the before I play my ABBA or whatever, we'll have more details on this week. More details on this coming up next week. But we should note that on what did we determine that the last Tuesday of August was? Is it the 31st?
It is the 31st. So. It is the 31st.
So coming up on Tuesday, the 31st, which is the final Tuesday of the month, that is coming up the final Tuesday of this month, that is Tuesday, August 31st, 2010. Tuesday, August 31st. 2010, the Emerson News Network will be having its. I don't even know if it's the first. It seems weird to say it's the first event because the show's been on for like 12 years. And we've done like 12 Rick Emerson things, and we've done like 50 things altogether. I mean, like 12 actual listener parties, and then like we had all of our like weird like Cinco de Drinko things and the Party Gras. I think we had at one point. It's all very weird. So it's either like the 150th event or it's like the first event, depending if you view it as an Emerson News Network thing. But that is going to be coming up Tuesday, August 31st. This is the first announcement of it that you are having. Let's see. We should have some sort of a sound or two. There we go. That is going to be coming up Tuesday, August 31st at the Someday Lounge, which is where many of you saw Roadhouse, the play. So that's going to be coming up at 7 p.m., 7 to 9, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday, August 31st at the Someday Lounge. So spectacle, entertainment, amusement, things. So be listening for more details on that. That is coming up Tuesday, August 31st, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Someday Lounge. So just you be listening. Hey, let me just follow up the Darwin Watch with this story.
Okay.
Let me see if I can find an appropriate sort of, let me see if I can find an appropriate music bed. And then maybe we should watch the trailer after this. Then we'll do some ABBA and we'll come back with other news and things because we're getting totally behind. But I did promise, I think, at the beginning of at the show, I said that I was going to try to that I was going to get to this story because it had the magical phrase at the end here. It had Sacramento Burn Center, who am I to unduly postpone that? What other headlines will be coming up later on in the show, though, Don?
Well, we do have a taser watch and a job watch. We have a piece on environmentalists who are outraged over dumping of contaminated crap on Hayden Island. And a dog who saved his owner's life.
Excellent. But first, let's do this. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program, and it's time for this story. There we go. A 21-year-old exotic dancer was arrested Wednesday afternoon in a hit-and-run accident, which caused a street striper to be hospitalized in a California burn center after the collision caused him to be splashed with 400-degree thermoplastic that melted onto his face and upper body. Brittanya Sherry Anderson Vancouver, a dancer at the men's club, was booked into Washoe County Jail on suspicion of felony hit and run causing substantial injury and operating a motor vehicle with a suspended license. Herberto Guillen of Washoe Valley remains at UC Davis Burn Center in Sacramento after suffering third-degree burns on his upper body and face. He's in critical but stable condition and is also suffering from broken ribs, said Reno Police Traffic Investigator Tom Mueller. The fleeing motorist had been driving a dark gray Toyota passenger car, possibly a Scion. Her bumper was left at the scene near Prototype Drive and Double R Boulevard. Police are investigating whether drugs or alcohol were a factor in the accident. Mueller said that Anderson Vancouver told police she was aware that she, quote, hit something, end quote, and continued driving home without stopping. She said she now knows the impact of, quote, hitting something, end quote. RDC spokesman Felicia Archer said the incident underscores the reality of dangerous road work. While authorities said this kind of accident is rare, it points to the importance of motorists paying attention and driving at reduced speeds through construction zones. According to traffic investigators, Rangel Julian's partner had been operating the striping machine when he saw the vehicle coming toward him. He'd been on his knees scraping material on the road. While his partner jumped out of the way, Guillen did not have the chance. He was struck with the striping machine along with the 400-degree plastic material. Police said boiling plastic melted over his face, sealing his mouth shut, and filling his nose. His eyes were also covered. It splashed on his arms and hair. They took him to Renown Hospital, where he was later taken to the Sacramento Burn Center. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-509-6964. 503-509-6964. Was that not worth the wait, Dawn?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to send everybody into the weekend with a...
That was horrifying.
I'm just saying, whenever you say to yourself, by God, my day's gone poorly. I couldn't find my sleeping mask this morning. I had to get up to talk to my editor. I had to go to this movie screening last night. It was a living hell. You said to yourself, at least my nose isn't filled with 400-degree plastic, Don.
Yeah, that's true.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Let's do our job watch, shall we?
Excellent. So we have taken the Office Confidential theme, and I think we have decided to make that into our job watch. And so that requires me to actually find it here. Hold on a second. This is completely my fault. This is my failure. No one else's, Dawn. It's mine. Completely and totally mine.
I'll remember that.
Mine and mine alone.
Use it later.
Thank you. Just be sure to quote that back to me at some point. All right. Without further ado, here's your job watch for Friday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program, he says, waiting for the sound to kick in.
Got him!
No, it's just not right. It's just not it's not playing properly. He'll have to transfer it to a thing. You know, this is the worst day possible, Don. I can't find this soundbite that I have to play. There's no way in which my life could be worse. Ooh, I could be covered with boiling plasticine. All right.
Yeah.
Here's your job watch.
I hate this job. I hate this goddamn job, and I don't need it.
Human beings were not meant to sit in little cubicles staring at computer screens all day, filling out useless forms and listening to 8 different bosses drone on about mission statements.
Get this job in service.
Here is Don Taylor with your job watch for Friday.
Modest job growth is predicted when the government releases its jobs report for July later this morning. Unemployment is expected to remain well above 9%. Economist Robert Bruska says small businesses are the key to lowering that number.
What is the name of this cut? Small business, which is we have so much goddamn sound we play on this show.
We've been slow to put people back on the employment rolls. A big part of the problem is concern by small businesses where a lot of the job growth is.
He doesn't sound like a real fun-loving guy. He sounds like a guy that probably talks that way all the time, even when he's at home trying to plot some sort of carnal activity with his wife.
He's no fun-loving NASA scientist.
No, he's... Well, no, but really, I mean, who is, like, in the grand scheme of things?
At this point, we're only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about their expectations, and then we can plan on that basis.
No, it really is true. Here's Don Taylor.
Bruska says it's going to take a while to bring unemployment down.
This is...
Unemployment.
We're still not looking for super strong job growth during this period.
Super strong.
You know, the economy has still been uneven. Consumer confidence has slipped.
That's the actual technical term for that.
We need to look through these candidates with ground-based telescopes and find out which are really... planets and which aren't.
It's almost like he's afraid of the word planet there for a second. Like he's been working, like maybe it's a word on which he used to stutter and he's sort of getting a running start at it.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
I love that guy. I could listen to that over and over again. Okay, here's Don Taylor.
A dog who chewed off his owner's big toe when he passed out after a day of drinking...
Bad dog.
...has been hailed a hero.
Mustn't. Oh, I'm sorry. Good dog.
Kiko, a Jack Russell Terrier, could sense that there was an infection festering in Derry Douthat's right big toe.
And by sense, you mean smell.
And acted after his owner was passed out in his Rockford, Michigan home. Jerry had had all these margaritas, so I just let him sleep, his wife Rosie, a registered nurse,
Jerry
said.
And Rosie.
But then I heard these screams coming from the bedroom, and he was yelling, "My toe's gone! My toe's gone!"
So he didn't scream because of the actual pain. He screamed at the shock of waking up one toe light, as it were.
Yes.
All right. So it was sort of a, hey, I was just here.
Well, Jerry had had this infection in his big toe and had refused to get it treated, despite the fact his wife is a registered nurse. She had been begging him for a month to go to a doctor, but he wouldn't go. They went out to celebrate her becoming an American citizen, and he said, "I probably had 5 or 6 beers. Then we went next door. They have these huge margaritas. They're about 32 ounces, and I killed it."
See, this is – and I killed it. This is why I don't – you were talking about how in journalism there was a – I think for the longest time, and maybe there still is, there's a sort of tendency to clean up the language when you're interviewing an area man. Because area man is always stupid. And sometimes, like they did this with W, they would print what he meant to say, not what he actually said. But I abhor that trend, because then we wouldn't have the entertainment value of the guy saying, "They had all these margaritas, and I totally killed one," which is awesome.
When he was admitted to the hospital, Mr. Luthet turned out had dangerously high blood sugar, a level of 560, which the recommended level is 80 to 120. His blood sugar level was 560.
Wait, so was he drunk or was he having like a diabetic coma of some kind?
A little bit of both, it turns out. He didn't know he had type 2 diabetes, and he'd had a whole lot to drink.
I haven't seen a picture of him, but I'm guessing it's not a surprise.
He also had been hiding his infected foot from people, including his wife.
I would imagine that's the sort of thing you wouldn't show off at like a cocktail party.
Well, he says,
"Have you seen my infected foot?"
And about it, he says, "It smelled, and I look back now and realize every time we'd visit someone with a dog, their dog would be sniffing all over my foot."
No, 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 no.
So he had the 4 or 5 beers and the 2 giant margaritas, and he kind of passed out on the bed, woke up and found his 5-year-old Jack Russell Terrier beside him on the bed. And a pool of blood near his foot.
I hate you. I hate you more than anything.
He ate it, Mr. Duthet said. I mean, he must have eaten it because we couldn't find it anywhere else in the house.
Oh, my God.
I looked down. There's blood all over. And my toe is gone. Tests in the hospital revealed Mr. Duthet had a deep infection down to his bone. And doctors were forced to amputate what was left of the toe.
It sounds like that was like a 5-minute job, though. God. You are the worst person on earth. You are worse. You are worse than cancer. Let me see that for a second. Hold on a second. I just it smelled, and I look at all the things I do over. Every time we'd visit somebody with a dog, their dog would be sniffing at my foot. That's the worst thing I have ever heard. Jesus, God Almighty. Oh my God! Before it was amputated, Mr. Duthet joked with a nurse and asked her if he could keep the rest of the toe as a treat for Keiko. All right, there you go. Is that the what sort of a name is it? Keiko? Kiko?
Kiko.
Whatever. All right. Well, good God Almighty. I heard all these screams coming from the bedroom. He was yelling, "My toe's gone! My toe's gone!" And then they know, by the way, that dogs have 220 million olfactory receptors compared to 50 million or so for human. And apparently, this particular infection is exactly the sort of tasty treat that dogs might enjoy. I don't even want to see that story on the table in front of me. That's revolting.
There we go.
And the question I have that they don't
and
really...
I saw this story yesterday, and I just kind of avoided it. But then 3 people sent it to me.
Oh, yeah. No, that's... The audience is sort of – here's the thing about the audience. The audience is like this living, breathing FARC. They're like an organic dig.com where they – but they aggregate only horrible things. And then they send them your way so that you might, quote, enjoy them. All right. Speaking of which, we'll take a little break here. On the other side, we'll watch the worst movie trailer that's ever been made. We got the top 5 coming up and so forth. Before we do any of that, though, we're going to listen to some ABBA. Because it's my show and it's been in my head like all morning, and there's just no way. I mean, well, because it's, you know, do you ever get the thing where you get in a jag with one particular song? Not just like you're listening to a record, and I don't mean that it's a song that's stuck in your head necessarily. Because I've had, here's the 2 things I've had going on this week. I got this ABBA song that's actually stuck in my head, where it's like you're just sort of, it's just like part of it, or just the melody and it's just sort of looping. And then, do you ever have this where you go through phases? And not that you, Don, would know anything about, like, maybe obsessive behaviors of any kind.
No.
But where you have a song that you just find yourself listening to, like, sometimes on repeat. And it's not even maybe, like, a new song. It's a song that's, like, 10 years old. And you're listening to it on repeat over and over and over and over and over and over again. Do you ever do that?
I do. I will do that sometimes, and especially if it's a song I really enjoy singing along with.
Yeah.
And then it's ever now that I live in an apartment, that doesn't really happen as much because I don't want my neighbors.
You're self-conscious,
to think, I'm self-conscious. Yeah. But when I lived in a standalone house, I would sometimes just play a song like 5-6 times in a row and sit there singing along with it at the top of my lungs.
That's my thing. And so you, I think we've played it a couple times during the. I won't play it again here, but we played it a couple times this week. Is this song by Charlie Robison called "Good Times," which has just been. It's like this sort of. I have just like the biggest weakness for like twangy honky tonk songs, and it's just been circling in my head like nonstop. But then this morning I woke up and had been joined by this ABBA song for like no readily apparent reason. So we're gonna do that here on the other side. We'll have more news from Don Taylor. We'll do let's see, still to come. We have a Taser Watch, Geek Watch. We'll watch this horrible movie trailer, and they will have the top five songs that Don plays in order to lift her spirits.
Sometimes and five or six times in a row, singing along with them loudly.
Ah, who can disagree? You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget, the Emerson News Network will be having our first major gathering Tuesday, August 31st, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Someday Lounge. So be listening for details on that. In the meantime, be listening for ABBA, like right now, on the Emerson News Network. Get right there. Fantastic. Who feels better? That's right. All right. Wait, who's? Did somebody say that it's stuck in her head?
Actually, two different people in the text box said that it's now going to be stuck in their head all day.
Glad I could help.
And one person called you a bastard.
All right. That's what I do. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. Somebody asked me in the text box if I'm really going to open every show for the next, quote, 4.5 months with the sound of Paul Stanley screaming. You know, why not? I mean, first of all, it's not always screaming. I mean, the one I played today is the, let's see, where is it? This is the one that I, which is sort of, you know, that's great. I got a lot, though. I got Paul Stanley asking people if they'd like to get high. I got Paul Stanley saying, do you believe in rock and roll? I got Paul Stanley, and I got like 100 things of Paul Stanley saying, people, I got to tell you, There you go. It's sort of a, it's all one word. People, I gotta tell you. It's sort of like how he doesn't say all right, he says oh hey. If you ever hear a Kiss live record, you know that that's how every one of his things begin. Oh hey.
You know that question, you know, do you believe in rock and roll?
Yes.
Particularly at a concert. It's pretty much a given that everyone's going to say yes.
Well, but I mean...
Probably not anybody who's there going, no, not really. I don't really believe in it. Not so much.
One can say that that is preaching to the choir, I suppose. But it is always nice to remind the choir what song they're singing, Dawn. Mm. That sounded incredibly profound. It means nothing.
No.
Nothing. Nothing at all in any way.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Healthcare reform measures approved by Democrats this year will help keep Medicare and Social Security trust funds going years longer.
Lie.
That's the word of the program's Board of Trustees, led by Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner.
All right. Let me just...
This would be Social Security.
All right. Okay. That's what I thought.
Both Social Security and Medicare still face considerable challenges. But today's reports are evidence that with resourceful and responsible policymaking, we can achieve very substantial improvements in limiting the rate of growth of healthcare costs.
Well, that's one of those things. It's true. It's just not true that we'll ever do it. I mean, that's like saying that, you know, with colonies on the moon, we'll be able to survive environmental disasters. I suppose that's true. Doesn't mean we actually have those things, that they'll ever exist. So, fair enough.
Geithner says the health care reform bill, in the long run, will bring savings to both programs if Congress does not repeal it.
For the benefits of these reforms to be realized, they have to produce large improvements in efficiency and productivity. They have to be allowed to work. Congress will have to stick with them.
All right. Well, there you go. He was saying something. He was mouthing some conglomeration of words, but I wasn't really listening. The thing about Social Security is that... I should say for the record, I don't necessarily buy the thing that Social Security is not going to be around, you know, when it's time for me to have it. Only because everybody has been saying that, and like it's never been true. It's just one of those things that like they've been like every 5 years they keep saying it's going to be bankrupt in a year, and it's never been bankrupt. So that is really the. That is really one of those the boy who cried wolf kind of things. I'm not saying it won't go bankrupt someday, but they keep saying like it's, you know, within 5 years, Social Security will have no money. And that's just, it's never, ever. Listen, it's a train.
Wow, that is a train.
I wonder if everybody else can hear that. It's a little bit of ambiance.
I think so. Oh, yeah.
Sometimes the train is not audible, and then sometimes it is. And the thing is, I don't really understand why. Because you got to figure the train, it's not like we're moving closer to the tracks, I don't think. And the trains are all more or less the same size. Maybe it's a weight issue or something. Because that wasn't just the horn. That was actually the noise of the train itself. Anyway, so blah, 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 blah.
In case you thought we were lying when we've said that we're right next to the train tracks.
No, we're out by the train tracks. It's sort of like some rule that every show that I'm associated with has to be right next to a train track that will go by every now and again and sort of go in the background. But my thing about Social Security, not that I really know anything about it, is that, one, they've just been saying forever that it's about to go bankrupt, and it hasn't, which makes me believe that they don't – whether it does or doesn't, if they're correct, it's just going to be like an accident. It'll be a coincidence because they don't really know. And also, the one thing that makes me feel almost okay about Social Security is that that's just run by math nerds. You know, and math nerds pretty much, they know what they're doing. I mean, you know those guys, they know how to carry a one correctly. So, it's whatever.
Hopefully it's being controlled by people who actually want to collect Social Security at some point. That it's not, you know, the fate. Ultimately, of course, it lies in the hands of stinking rich white guys who aren't going to be depending on Social Security. But we can only hope that really the people who work for them are counting on getting a little something someday.
I get the most fascinating story you got to read at some point, and it's not like a lengthy thing. It's a small like human interest piece that was on CNN some time ago. But it's just it is a profile of the folks. See now because Obama says it, and we make fun of him. Now I feel, and that's the thing I always have just said. And see now because Rick Emerson is the common man. Now I just feel self conscious. But you know the folks who sit there and then they calculate the national debt. And you would think that it's like there's some it's like a thousand people in some huge skyscraper building somewhere, and it's like four people, and like three assistants who work in this tiny little like one story brownstone like in Virginia somewhere, that looks for all the world like a community center where maybe they're working on like a book drive for next fall, and where they have like you know, like little like Mr. Potato Head things, like clutching calculators on their desks, and it's all they're all about 37-year-old women. Who are just colossal, huge, gigantic number and math nerds. And they have, like, no real connection to the government. They don't seem to have any ideological investment in anything. They're just huge math nerds. And they all consider it, like, their dream job because they get to spend all day working on basically, like, the largest math problem on Earth and tracking it. And you'd get them talking about it. And it's like nearly every day, apparently, someone brings a cake because they just love working there. and they just sit there and they ask about the national debt and their eyes light up. And they, where did he go? I just put the thing over here. They're all like this guy.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates.
They're all like that, but just talking about numbers and so forth. So anyway,
we need somebody like that who works here.
Who knows me, numbers?
Well, just has that kind of enthusiasm, and who will bring cake?
I was gonna say I would settle for just the cake part.
Yeah, I mainly think of that for the cake.
Yeah, I think trying to sum it up enthusiasm is a bit of a hit or miss proposition. I would say I think it depends on the day.
Yeah.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's. I got to do this Geek Watch. I have to make sure this happens.
Hold on a second. Let's see. Where is my? Oh, here's your Geek Watch for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux. Now, just listen.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Awesome. Here's your Geek Watch for Friday.
Thousands of fans will invade Orlando in just days for the world's largest celebration of everything Star Wars. The Star Wars Celebration will bring some big names to the region, including George Lucas, Mark Hamill, and Carrie Fisher. The Daily Show host Jon Stewart will attend and interview Lucas on stage August 14th. And a petition is being circulated to change the name of Orlando... to Lando, in honor of the character Billy Dee Williams played in the movies. If you want to sign the petition, you can go online to welcometolando.com. The man behind the idea said, it's the 30th anniversary of The Empire Strikes Back, so let the Force be with us during this epic week. Despite the petition effort, Williams won't be attending the convention, which runs from August 12th through the 15th at the Orange County Convention Center.
Do they say why he won't be attending?
He's got better things to do. I don't know.
That's almost certainly not true. That you know, that's not true.
I don't know.
I think the
maybe they forgot to invite him. I have no idea.
I think the empirical evidence in this story indicates he doesn't have better things to do. And don't tell me creating an online petition is the better thing to do, because online petitions are successful all the time. Those always work. Okay, I wasn't. The only part of the story I'm with is the part about changing it to Lando. That's pretty great. I could get with that. I've talked about it. Well, it's actually a good time to mention something else. If you go to rickemerson.com, you just go to click on either blog or Rick Emerson Show. It's the most recent blog entry, and it's also on Facebook. Someone is calling.
It's Billy Dee Williams.
It's probably not. Let's see.
Wouldn't it be awesome if it was, though?
You should change your land. Change it to Colt 45. Hello. Hi. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Sir, madam, as the case may be.
Hi. Is this Rick Emerson right now at the moment?
Yes. Well, at the moment, I could be Ernest Borgnine in a few minutes, but at the moment, yes, it is Rick Emerson. Who might this be?
This is Caleb. You gave me advice last night.
Yes, it is. Now, is this a thing we can discuss? Can I discuss this? Can I mention in a sort of generalized way what we were talking about? This is Caleb. So he and I were talking on Facebook on the chat last night. Can I mention what we were discussing in a sort of vague sense?
Yeah, sure.
So I'm on Facebook last night, and the whole thing on the chatting thing on Facebook is perplexing.
You
I don't
were
know how
actually
it works.
Chatting with an actual person on Facebook?
I couldn't avoid it. It was.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, so was I. It was. I didn't really expect that was good. Here's the. I don't want to sound like I don't like to talk to people. It's just that like. Antisocial though I am in some ways. It's not like I dislike the idea that if you go into Facebook, somebody might want to talk to you. It's just, the thing is, like, I don't think, Like, I don't know how many Facebook friends you've got, but I mean, this is probably a lot, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And I mean, imagine if, like, you went on. And again, I'm not complaining as such. I'm just saying it's the law of averages. Thank you. Somebody's messaging me right now on Facebook, you bastards. I can hear it. What was I saying? Somebody just messaged me on Facebook. You dislike the idea of talking to me. I know you do. But you know, the thing is, you go onto Facebook and you're either visible or invisible. Right. I don't think there's like visible to some people. And so when I go on, you know, if there's like 5% of the Facebook friends that decide to drop me a message and say howdy, I mean, that's still like 50 people. And so after a while, which is just fine. It's all well and good. But you can't respond to everybody. There's just no time. I mean, I just don't have enough arms. There's no way. And so then I feel like a jerk for not responding. So it's a thing that I try to avoid just because then I feel bad that I can't respond to everybody. So I'm on last night posting a link to this article that I was going to mention where I talk about not seeing Star Wars as a kid. Dicks. hate you all. Anyway, so...
So hey, Caleb popped up and asked you something.
Hey, listen, it's the sound of me closing the window. So I'm on there last night, and this message from Caleb pops up, and he says, hey, Rick, are you there? And it was like I could see that it was just sent. Yeah. And if I'm on and somebody messaged me right at that moment, I will totally answer. And I said, hey, what's up? And as it turns out, so Caleb was asking, inexplicably so, asking my advice on, wait for it, relationships, because I have such a strong track record of interpersonal relationships that go well and of getting along with people. And he was.
But you did end up happily married to a lovely woman, though.
Well,
so you must have done something right at some point.
Actually, yeah. So he was. He had a question about the fairer sex and about the sometimes confusing and seemingly contradictory behaviors that women exhibit toward men, such as acting as though they're into you. And then, let's say theoretically, not that this happened to anybody who might be part of this phone call, being nice to you and, being together with you in a romantic sense for some period of time, and then dumping you for a guy who's clearly a dick or a douchebag. Not that that happened to Caleb, but
it's been known to happen.
It has been known to happen. And I said, well, you know, here's the thing. And I was, you know, trying to be, you know, and trying to get over the fact that anybody would consider me like useful for advice for anything. But I said the thing of like, you know, you can't like, you know, you just chicks. There's nothing that turns a chick off faster than to being like desperate or being like naggy, you know, or pestery about it. And I'm like, you know, just if you're going to be friends, you just like lay out the case and you say, look, I don't think he seems like kind of a dick, but, you know, whatever, whatever makes you happy. And then, as 38 Special said, you got to hold on loosely, but don't let go. And then eventually, you know, it'll either happen or not. But you can't like, you know, yeah. you can't force somebody to do something because that's just, you know, it never works. And then you're building Stepford robots and it's bad. And then at the end, he says, Well, Mr. Emerson, it seems to have worked out well for you with your lovely wife. How did that happen? He said, clearly mystified. And I just said, I said, you know, sometimes the universe just gives you one. Sometimes you're just lucky and life hands you something, which is the reason why I have Lara, because the universe just gave me something good. So that was the gist of the conversation. What brings you to the phone? And then he ended it by saying, by the way, I will not ever be calling you about this. And yet now he's on the phone.
He is.
What brings you to the phone today, Caleb?
I was just being sarcastic last night, but I just wanted to thank you because I just had lunch with her and her and I are going back out now.
Look at that. Healing relationships everywhere and bringing people together. Rick Emerson is a uniter, Caleb.
Yeah, totally.
First of all, congratulations. Glad things worked out. Can I ask what sort of conversation the lunch entailed? Because the backstory is that you dated her for some period of time, and then you split up, and then she was with some guy that was just a tool. And you were like, well, what's up with that? And I said, chicks, tools, what are you going to do? It's, you know, I mean, because and this is the thing that doesn't make anybody feel any better when you say it, but you have to say it because it's true. Well, like, sometimes that just happens. Like,
yeah.
People just date somebody who's obviously like an ass, and there's nothing you can do about it. What did the conversation consist of at lunch today?
I just told her what was up, you know, what I was thinking, and she was thinking pretty much the same thing. She wasn't quite sure why she broke it off with me to go back to this douchebag. So, I don't know.
And so were you supportive but non-judgmental?
Yes, I was.
That's the tone I said to take. See, so there you go. Rick Emerson understands what time it is, you know, when it comes to the ladies. So, Dawn, while we're on the phone here with Caleb, do you have any, as a woman and as a Muslim, Dawn, do you have any advice about future female behaviors that might seem mystifying that you would like to demystify for him now?
Not a clue.
All right, there you go. So we have not a clue.
Women baffle me as much as they do anybody else, frankly.
They're crazy, Caleb. There's nothing you can
do
about
it. Yeah, they're just nuts.
They're just nuts. So, well, I'm glad things worked out for you.
Me too.
All right, excellent. I would say to continue to ask me advice in the future, but this is almost certainly the only time I'll be right or successful about anything. I would say to disregard any advice I give you in the future. I'm giving you advice now. If my future self tells you to do something, it's probably not going to work out. So I'd rather go out with 100% batting average like this.
Well, thank you for the help, though.
Well,
really.
Well, I'm glad to help. I'm glad that everything worked out with you and your lady friend. So, best of luck to you both, sir.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, thank you, Caleb. All right, there you go. There's that guy. That is Caleb.
That's
so
very nice.
You
were nice.
Well, I could. I'm not a whore. I'm not Gargamel. What is it?
You were
was
kind.
Nice.
You behaved in a kind, helpful fashion. That's awesome.
You mean just now or in...
All of it. You talked to the guy. You didn't blow him off when you were on Facebook. And you answered his questions.
Well, I mean...
And you helped him. Look at you.
Well, I inadvertently helped him, by which I mean that, like, who knows? It could have gone disastrously. I mean, he could have gone out and she threw acid in my face, Rick. She cut off my legs. Look, if there's one thing I know, it's how to ruin relationships, because I have many, 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 many years of practice doing that. So,
but that also puts you in the position, though, that you just advise people to do the opposite.
That was my thing. Well, because I'm not going to sit and talk about the whole thing. I mean, everybody kind of heard the resolution there, but it was the deal of like, well, we're going out, and then she, you know, we break up, and then now she's with this guy who's like, you know, jerk or whatever. And I my whole thing was, and this is advice I think for all men. My whole thing was you just got to like because he said, well, we're still friends. And I said, well, if you're going to be a friend, then you just got to act like a friend, which, you know, which means you're supportive and don't you like tell her once. It's like my whole thing about, you know, it's like I don't know if you ever had any rules like this when you were dating, but it's just the thing about and it's not like the wait 3 days to call rule or whatever, but it's like the thing of like you call to ask the chick out and you leave the message or whatever. And then if you don't hear back, you leave one final briefer message.
Right.
Where you just say, hey, you know, I'll be around. You got my number. Give me a call. Whatever. And then that's it. And then you just burn the number. And you don't ever call her again. Because it's not like she missed both messages or somehow like she forgot how to understand English and she heard them and they were just gibber. She knows. And so she'll at that point, it's up to her. And it's like all you're going to be doing is wasting time trying to make her do something she doesn't want to do otherwise. And that
and
was
if you start looking
said.
Needy, then you
that.
Become really unappealing.
Yeah, because they don't want to, you know, because, yeah, they just – so that was what I – and I didn't feel it was appropriate to share that this morning. But see, he called up. So
nice.
So there you go. So by the way, this is this is going to be a thing I'm going to reference constantly. It's like that couple that named their baby after me 2 years ago. I gotta dig up that email so I can frame it and put it on a wall in gold leaf or something. So this will be now. All I need to do is stop a guy from jumping off a bridge or something, and then I can just wave those at anybody who accuses me of being a bad person in your face, everybody. All right. Well, let's do one more, and then we'll watch this movie trailer.
Okay. Let's see. What did we do? Oh, this.
Now
one.
Wait a minute. Is that when you just bumped? Did you just bump that microphone
there?
Yeah.
Well,
that microphone's not even turned on.
Well, then why? Listen to that, though.
Hold on a second. Have I had you in the wrong microphone all this time?
Maybe.
There we go.
So is that it? It's been going in there? Over
yeah.
There? Well, no wonder it sounds kind of hollow.
That
and
explains
wrong.
It. Well, you know, that's Greg's fault and B, my fault. If it makes you feel better, I actually didn't notice that it sounded. I just thought maybe you had an extra lung. I didn't notice it. It didn't sound bad to me. I think the microphones got switched at some point this morning, and I did not then switch them back. That's my fault. Mm. So I wonder why when you bumped it didn't seem like you were bumping the microphone. All right. Well, what are you going to do?
And I wasn't bumping this one as much as I normally do, so maybe that should have.
Now we're back to the to the flawless sound of the show. I actually didn't even notice this entire time. So
I thought it sounded a little weak, but
you should have said something about it.
I don't know. You're the audio guy.
Clearly,
I can barely tell anything.
I had the wrong microphone turned on for 2.5 hours. Clearly, I'm a genius.
We have conversations about the show where you're like, "I think the show was terrible," and I'm like going. I didn't think it was so bad. So I'm like walking around thinking maybe I'm just completely oblivious to everything
but
lately.
But that's just a judgment call. This is I had the wrong switch turned on. And you know that I turn the wrong switch on at some point almost every day. So you know who's really to blame for this is Bruce Agler, who normally is the one who's immediately talking, show's not going to holler today.
Plus, I've got the new headphones on that I just bought this morning.
And so it's throwing off your whole sense of perception.
Everything sounds different. And it's pressed, and they're tight, so they're pressing on my ears.
Because I have to say, this show does have exceptional microphones. The microphones we use here are fantastic sounding. But that didn't actually sound so bad because it's an omnidirectional microphone, first of all. So it didn't sound as bad as you think it did. And you're far enough away that your plosives weren't registering. Plus, it gave a sense of geographic space when you spoke because there was sort of echoing.
A sense
going
of space.
On. That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm looking for.
What are we doing here?
Well, what time
we
is it?
Have a taser watch to get to?
Let's do the taser watch because we're running short on time.
A couple things. First of all, and I'll talk more about him in a bit, the Cleaning Solution and the person of Michael Beatty is one of the fine sponsors of this show. You can find out more about the Cleaning Solution at 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. This, however, is your taser watch, and it's sponsored by mugshotlist.com, run by a listener named Andy. Covers 19 counties in Oregon, 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. And there's some weird-looking people in there. I mean, weird. You don't know from weird. You haven't seen weird in your life. It's just flat out, terrifying-looking people. They are always adding new mugshots, and of course, it's updated around the clock. So that is mugshotlist.com, the proud sponsor of this, the Taser Watch. You got me running, going out of my mind.
I didn't do it, bro.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't taste me, bro.
Your taser watch for Friday.
A Pennsylvania man who was asleep in the back of a cab claims he was shocked with a taser because he shushed a state trooper when the man tried to wake him. Philip S. Chappelle, 29, of Washington, Pennsylvania, filed a federal lawsuit Thursday against the state police as well as Trooper Jeffrey Osrodowski, claiming the officer had no reason to take aggressive action against him. On August 8, 2008, Mr. Chappelle and a friend attended a preseason Steelers football game, and then they, quote, continued to enjoy a post-game celebration, unquote. Early the next morning, the men hired a cab to take them back to town, but both men fell asleep during the trip. According to the lawsuit, the cab driver presumably was unable to wake them. So he drove them to the state police barracks, arriving just after 2:20 a.m., when the trooper attempted to wake Mr. Chappelle, he shushed the trooper and went back to sleep.
Don't taunt Happy Fun Ball. Don't shush the trooper.
The trooper again tried to wake him, and Mr. Chappelle shushed him again. At that point, the lawsuit said Trooper Osrodowski fired his taser at the sleeping man. The complaint said the taser sent 50,000 volts of electricity through Mr. Chappelle's body and argues that officers are trained to use the weapon only when subjects are resisting arrest or being aggressive. At no time did Mr. Chappelle pose any threat to the officer or to himself
or others. So where was the guy sleeping?
In the back of a taxi cab.
All right. And so, now, wait, was the taxi driver there?
Yes. The taxi driver couldn't wake him up.
Called a cop.
So drove him to the police barracks.
All right.
And I guess presumably went inside and said, I need you to get this guy out of my cab.
So that's sort of like a, you press the snooze alarm once, fine. Twice, fine. Third time, it tases you. All right.
Yes.
You know, if my snooze alarm did that, I'd probably be on time more often. If I just sort of, you know, the third time, just sort of, yeah, you know, and that would probably get me out of bed. So, I mean, you know, all right.
Mr. Chappelle claims he sustained a variety of injuries in the incident, including burns, numbness, scarring, and post-traumatic stress. He also notes in his lawsuit that he's had an implanted pacemaker since he was 13 months old.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. That's just one of those, what else could possibly go wrong with this story? There you go. There's your. This is again why I don't own a taser or a stun gun or anything because I would use it on everybody. That taser watch brought to you by mugshotlist.com. That is run by our friend Andy, covering 19 counties in Oregon, 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. That is mugshotlist.com, adding new mugshots around the clock. Go there now, won't you please?
Don't care.
That always makes me so happy. I know we've, you know, here's the thing is we're actually getting to almost everything today. It's astounding. I don't even know how that worked. It's almost like an accident somehow. Let's see. Okay, so I have posted, I had to post it so I could close Facebook but so people would, you know, quit with the popping and the pinging and the messaging and the hey there. All right, so I have now posted at my Facebook page. Okay. If you go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson. And again, there is one for the Rick Emerson show. And I mean, it sounds like it, like you shouldn't use it or whatever. It's just that, that's the one that Cheryl monitors. Because otherwise I got like 100 windows open all the time. It just becomes a pain.
Now, how do you want to do this? Should I plug the thing in so that they could hear the sound while I'm watching
it? I've got it over – well, here's the thing. I've got it actually over on my machine sort of just downloaded as a separate file.
Okay.
So why don't you go to the link right now and sort of, you know, vet everybody.
And we'll do a 3-2-1.
Well, and we'll let it buffer or whatever. Does that – you know, because I think it's like a – it's a like a sort of a, an embedded like a YouTube-style video. So go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson. Facebook.com/Rick Emerson, and it is the link there where it says, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you like the worst movie trailer in the history of the world, or words
and,
to that effect.
And that will take you to Jezebel.com.
Yes. And so once you go there, you load up the trailer, and then we'll do like one story here just to sort of give it some buffering time.
Okay.
And then we'll all watch the trailer together, and I'll run the audio off my computer just in case there's any sort of skipping or whatever. I've got over here saved for time and all eternity, as your Mormon friends would say. You want to work in a Mormon phrase? Do you ever work in any Mormon phraseology during your Mormon book club?
Honestly, we don't really talk about the Mormon thing very often. It doesn't really come up, except for in situations like I said, when it was my birthday and they started singing these loud, cheerful, incredibly insane birthday songs at me that I'd never heard before, and I was like, and it was like suddenly being surrounded by aliens. It was just freakish.
No, because the Mormons are great, like Scientologists, because they have all of their own proprietary songs. I was going to teach you. Wait, hold on a second. Let me just, because we have a little time to kill her anyways, we're letting this thing buffer. Let me see here. Let's see. I apologize for just being that guy looking up things online. All right. I think I may have this. Okay. This is a song that my wife taught me, because my wife, of course, was raised Mormon, and she and like everybody, you know, they jam that stuff into your head, and you just know it forever. And so occasionally she would, you know, early on in our relationship, same thing. She'd go, well, don't you know the whatever, because she grew up in Salt Lake, you know, or in Provo, and I would say, like, no, no one knows it but you.
And these birthday songs, I don't know what this song is you're going to play, but it's like, it was like, oh, it's my birthday, hooray. And they're like, hey, and all of a sudden, all of them in music start doing, happy birthday, birthday. And it's like this song I'd never heard before. And it was crazy cheerful, like psycho cheerful.
No, they're all really, 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 really up-tempo. They're all very, very upbeat, and they're all – because the – it sounds like I'm picking a Mormon. But Mormons, they're a very – here's the thing I'll say about the Mormon church. I got lots bad to say about them, but only in the sense that I do about religion in general. There's lots that I could say about the Mormon church is actually pretty good. First of all, they have just scorchingly hot female members. I mean, really, Mormon chicks are just – you know.
And also, my dad's best friend was Mormon when I was a kid growing up, and I actually went to the Mormon church briefly during my period of going to like 6 or 7 different churches, thinking maybe I could find one that would
work.
Looking
for the answer.
And my experience has always I have really, really liked all of the Mormons I have ever known. I do think, you know, their religion is just
crazy. Nuts. Yeah, it's bonkers.
But Mormons themselves, lovely people.
Yeah. I would say this, and it's, you know, it sounds like I'm saying some of my best friends are Mormons. They've been in my home. But I will say that if ever I needed the assistance of some sort of an organization or group or a charity type outfit, like if I really actually was in very dire straits, the Mormon Church would be the first people I go to, because the thing is, I know that they would actually, honestly, sincerely want to help me. So you know, and whatever. But they're a very they're a very cheerful religion. They're a very sunny they have a very sunny disposition, especially as opposed to goddamn Catholics who are just obviously, you know, have some blood, you're all going to die, you know, covered in flames, here's scary incense, you know, and it's all, you
see,
know.
And those were my people, the lapsed, cynical, angry Irish Catholics.
Yeah, and just, and you know, and just speaking to you in Latin and like muttering a bunch of garbage in tongues. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just insanity. Anyway, so they have all of their own songs, and they're all very cheery. And so early on, I had to sort of like make it clear to Lara that they don't sing those anywhere else, baby. That's just in Mormon land. And I can't find the one that I'm looking for. But here's another one. This is the one that I was going to try to teach you, and apparently they've updated it. It is a song in which they list off all of the Mormon prophets, all of the presidents of the Mormon church. And it's sort of like a song about knowing it's like Colton's president's song, but it's about Mormon prophets. And her version only goes up until, like, I guess 1992 or something, because that's when she left the church. Sorry if my in-laws are listening. That's when she left the church.
When I was a kid and I was in Sunday school, there was a song similar to that I remember learning that was Books of the Bible that I, of course, forgot almost all of immediately, except that I still in my head, though, I still remember the part that went, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, the Acts and Epistle to the Romans, 1st and 2nd Corinthians. So I will always know that part of the Bible.
Because it's one of those things that just sticks with you, right? It's like when they teach you like a song about memorizing state capitals or some crap, or like Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, and that really is my final thing about Mormon culture, with which I am fascinated. And you could not make, by the way, you could not make a more perfect creation for my wife and myself, because we're this whole Bridget meets Bernie kind of a thing. Because, you know, Trey Parker and Matt Stone are working on a Broadway musical about mm-hmm. the Mormon church. And that's like a thing that is made for Lara and I. It is the point where our Venn diagrams overlap. what was my point? Da, 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 da. One of the things about the Mormon church is that they micromanage every single moment of your life every day. Every day of the week, there is an activity for your family. There's, you know, there's obviously Sunday, but there's Monday, which is family home evening, and there's whatever. So every day of the week, they got a thing for you. And so it's like they are like jamming information and or brainwashing into your head like instantly, forever. The second you are born until the second you leave the church or die, you're hearing it. And it's via things like Schoolhouse Rock style songs. This is the Apostle song, I believe.
Thomas S. Monson is the prophet you know. Henry B. Irene is the next below. Dieter F. Uchter is the third you see.
These are the Apostles.
And that makes up the first presidency. Boyd K. Packer taught 7 AMP. L. Tom Perry is 6'3". Russell M. Nelson operated on folks. A Supreme Court justice was Dallin H. Jokes.
All right, so this I've actually stumbled onto a second one. This actually isn't even the president song. This is one for the apostles who are like bishops. Okay, this is actually the one I'm talking about. Jesus, they have one for everything. So this is counting all the presidents, prophets since Joseph Smith.
Okay.
I swear to God, no, this is just a PowerPoint presentation about them.
Oh.
I'll have to find it. I'll find it later. And okay. I'll find it. And the thing is, you should my wife is at home screaming at the radio probably. She's yelling. She's yelling at home, you know, the prophet song, and that I ought to know it by now. But that song I played, the Davy Crockett kind of thing, that's just the apostles. And so they are the cardinals.
Okay.
The pope is sort of the prophet. And then below him is cardinals who are – that's the first presidency, I think, or maybe the Quorum of the Twelve or something. But so there are songs, though, to memorize like all of them. And there's a song to memorize like all 17 or 15 prophets or whatever there's been too. But so I'll teach you that, or like a primary song. And a primary song is that's like a Sunday school song.
Yeah.
And then you can just slip it into your Mormon book club conversation at some point. Or –
just
you
start
could,
singing it.
Yeah, a big thing in the Mormon church is the phrase choose the right. And you'll see a lot of people wearing CTR rings. And that's their like slogan. It's like a do the right thing sort of a deal. And so you should do like a whole, well, I have to choose the right sauce to go with these pancakes that I'm making for everybody.
I will do that this evening.
And
I
then
will.
Like give them the long look and the wink. All right. Are we ready with the trailer, do you think? Is it buffered?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Because you can either watch it here or we can just watch it at the same time on different computers. It doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah, we watch it at the same time.
All right. So everybody who has gone to Facebook.com/Rick Emerson and go to the entry that's marked the worst trailer in the history of the world and it's got it buffered, I'll play the audio here off off my machine.
Okay.
I swear to God.
Let me know when you're when
we'll give you like a 3-2-1.
Like yeah.
And it won't be on the one. It'll be on the unsaid zero.
Okay.
So 3-2-1 and then playing. This looks like it's a fake trailer. And part of me wishes that it was, because I would like to think that this movie hadn't actually been written and made and funded and whatever. But I don't see any way. This doesn't seem like one of those things where they recut The Shining to look like it's a wacky family drama or something. This I don't see any way this isn't real. And here's the other thing, this isn't. This isn't one of those deals where they make the trailer for the studio to try to get a sense of what the movie might be like to figure out if they're going to make it. Because it's got Cher in it and Stanley Tucci. Who are people you're not going to recruit? They're not going to be like day players that you get on the set for like an hour and a half just to film a trailer. They claim the girl in this is Christina Aguilera, but I swear to God, it looks like Hilary Duff. I mean, it must be Christina Aguilera, I mean, because it says she is and she sings at one point, but it looks for all the world like she's been all duffed over. Cheryl sent this to me, and she said, "This is the worst trailer I have ever seen. Nothing will ever be this bad again." And I said, "Well, nothing can be that. How could it possibly be that bad?"
It sounds like you're overselling it.
I'm really, really not. Okay, so we're going to count down 3, 2, 1, and then on the zero, which is unspoken but understood, we will press play. Are you ready, Dawn Taylor?
I am ready.
All right. 3, 2, 1, play. Here comes the following preview. Has been approved for appropriate audiences by the Motion Picture Association of America. And
how much to Los Angeles?
One way or a round trip?
You're kidding, right?
Says in a city of dreams.
And beyond your imagination.
It's showing Hollywood.
When you are putting on your makeup, it's like you're an artist. But instead of painting on canvas, painting your face.
Wow, is Cher stoned?
She's also apparently a robot
what is
at this point.
So she's getting a job at like a Bob Fosse strip club?
She's getting a job at Moulin Rouge.
And you're in my mirror because?
I've never seen anything like this before, and I really want to be a part of it.
Great enthusiasm, terrible timing.
Cher's starting to look a little like that cat lady.
Jocelyn Wildenstein.
Backstage yesterday.
I want to be up there. I want to do that.
The question is, you have the talent
because you're on.
Even the bartender's dressed like a Bob Fosse chorus boy.
What happened to all the great dancers in LA?
They're all dancing with the stars.
What is she doing up there?
I think she's auditioning.
Hey, Dave, cut it.
Hold on a second. I can do this.
And it's sweet that you think so.
Just tell me what you want.
I can't tell you. Nobody can tell you. You gotta make me believe that you belong on that stage, that it's yours, and that nobody can take it from you. Now, you wanna show me something? Show me that.
Drop the curtain. Come on, let's go.
Oh.
Yeah, no, you gotta. You can't look away, you have to keep watching.
Hold it. Where's the curtain? There are going to be all kinds of people. They'll just want to get close to you because you're talented.
Clearly, one of us has underestimated the other.
All right, so.
What is Allie short for?
Alice.
Alice? Well, welcome to Wonderland.
Yeah! Yeah, that's what I'm talking about right there.
I can't wait for this movie.
Welcome
this is
to Wonderland, he says. I was almost going to pause it and make you guess. Welcome
to Wonderland.
To Wonderland.
Oh, Stanley Tucci.
Stanley Tucci. I mean, okay, so for everybody who just endured the audio there, you really, really, really have to go watch the video of this. I mean, it's just... Do you see what I mean when I say it's bad in as Roger Ebert said of Last of the Airbenders, it's bad in every way I can think of in ways that haven't even been invented. It's
Yeah, but
bad.
It's bad. It's bad in
No, don't even say it. Don't even
no,
say it.
I'm going to say it's bad in like this crazy over the top gay sort of a way that I actually am curious to see what happens.
No, no.
That is like probably the gayest movie trailer I've seen in a very long time.
Okay, but it's gayness aside, which is not like a strike against it or anything. I don't even know who you are anymore. Hold on. Let's stop. Let's get a hold of ourselves. What do you mean that you want to go see what happens? You know exactly what happens. You could write the script for this movie at home today without having seen it.
Yeah,
if I sent you home to storyboard this movie, you could do it.
That's true. It's just going to be, you know, showgirls watered down.
That's all. It is showgirls. But clearly, it is showgirls set in Moulin Rouge. And of course, Christina Aguilera was on the soundtrack for Moulin Rouge. And by the way, am I alone in thinking that doesn't look anything like her?
Not until they get her in the eyeliner.
There. If I hadn't heard her sing there, which is distinctive, it's distinctive, but not nearly as interesting as people seem to think it is for some reason.
Is that actually Cher or is that a Cher marionette?
Sort of a Thunderbirds Cher.
Yeah.
It's like a spinning image Cher. But do you see me? She looks like a Hall of Presidents version of herself.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Hall of Presidents, Cher.
The thing about makeup.
And she's giving this like philosophical lecture as she's painting her up like a whore, you know, in the mirror. What was my point? Oh, yeah, but it doesn't look anything like – if you took her name off of that, I don't think I would have known until she started singing that it was Christina Aguilera. She looks just like either Hillary or Hayley Duff. Mm-hmm. Stanley Tucci's in it clearly playing the what's-his-name part from Showgirls, the she's got it, but they don't teach it at any school. She prowls the stage, Tony. She struts. You could say that, Showgirls suck too, but at least Showgirls sucked first. Showgirls was there. And there was no, you know, before when Showgirls came out, it was terrible. It wasn't like they were able to say, well, yeah, Showgirls is bad, but it's, you know, it's Showgirls
and
bad.
Showgirls is also a crazy Paul Verhoeven.
It's awesome.
You know, sort of a goddamn I hate Hollywood kind of a movie. Yeah, I'm going to show you how much I hate Hollywood by making a Hollywood movie kind of a movie.
But the thing, it's like Showgirls. They weren't able to compare that to anything when it came out. Showgirls did not exist as something to be compared itself to. It created a category of bad yet enjoyable yet sort of awesome but terrible films. But this is – people just go, well, it's Showgirls bad, and that's how you know it's not even enjoyable in that way.
No, this is just looks like they're going for camp.
Ugh.
And it's because they're realizing that, you know, there's all of these dance programs that are very popular on TV.
They ought to just re-release Showgirls into the theater. They've already got it made. How much could it cost to possibly market that and stick it on a big screen? And I mean, that's a thing. That's a thing that I don't understand why don't they do that. Because, you know, like Court and Bobby do the Midnight Movie, and they do like they do the sing along Sound of Music or whatever.
Yeah.
And like you know, the Deluxe Hotel last night, there's this thing I was there for. But up on the roof, they do the what is that thing they do that. Movie under the stars
the
or whatever,
or something like
but
that.
They were showing
Flicks
little
on the bricks.
Little darlings, you know, last night. I don't know why they don't do that nationally and re-release Showgirls for a month.
Well, there was a guy who had a sort of a road show where he traveled around to theaters and showed Showgirls and then did snarky commentary to it while it was showing. And he ended up on the commentary track for the DVD.
But that's less
and
interesting.
And it was not that interesting.
Because to me, it's the whole – if the thing of treating Showgirls like it's a treating it like it's camp, I don't know. It's like they were rushing too fast. You know, they were so eager to make it into camp that they somehow missed the mark with that. And as opposed to like Valley of the Dolls, I think, which sort of developed more naturally. But what was my point? Bah, 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 bah. I was going to say something, but you know,
well, I will say if anyone listening is interested in my opinion of Showgirls, you can Google Don Taylor DVD Journal. Showgirls and find my extensive deconstruction of the film Showgirls from the now defunct DVD Journal,
which
online.
I don't think I've ever actually read, so I should do that. The difference, I will actually, in fact, I'm going to make it on someone to read that tonight. Don Taylor, Showgirls. The thing about this movie, burlesque, this though is to Showgirls, it seems to me, as season 3 True Blood is to season 1 True Blood. Season 1 True Blood, they were making this sort of, you know, kind of tawdry, but I think more or less serious in its own soapy way series. Whereas now with season three, it feels like they are just like, oh, no one told us we were a camp show. Okay, we'll write that. And now they're writing a camp show. This seems... I think Showgirls is meant to be over the top. Showgirls is not meant to be kitsch. I don't think it was meant to be camp. I think it was meant to be exaggerated and, again, it was meant to be melodrama.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they were trying to make it high art, but I'm saying I don't think it was meant to be like a zany, kitschy comedy. Whereas with this, this really is meant to be kitschy. Kitschy, kitschy, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, it's written and directed by a fellow named Stephen Anton, who...
That name is familiar to me for some reason.
Mostly...
I don't know why.
He's an actor.
I don't even know where that name is coming from.
He was on six episodes of NYPD Blue.
Now I just wish I'd started today's program. We started with the man song and the Paul Stanley. I wish I'd just started with my Showgirls clip. We'll do that on Monday, which just ends with what's-his-name going, thrust it! Like 100 times, which is awesome. All right, so there you go. So that is one of the worst things I've ever seen, though. I actually found myself pulling away from the screen last night when I was watching that. It was so bad. And that Stanley Tucci is lowering himself to being in that somehow.
Peter Gallagher and Eric Dane and Alan Cumming are all in this movie.
Okay.
Alan Cumming.
Yeah, but you said it's like the gayest movie ever, so, you know.
Yeah.
Peter Gallagher... is just there because he'll apparently say yes to anything.
Yeah.
That's a thing where it's like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what movie it is.
And if you can't afford Kyle MacLachlan, get Peter Gallagher.
It really is the case. It's like he just signs on the bottom line, like, you know, for any movie they offer him. And it never seems to rub off. Just like it doesn't seem to rub off on Tommy Lee Jones. He'll just accept anything they offer him, like Christopher Walken, and he comes out unscathed. The other side, unsullied.
Yeah. Except Peter Gallagher is to, like, Kyle MacLachlan as basically Treat Williams is to Tommy Lee Jones.
Good. With a Treat Williams reference. okay. It was either you could have gone that way, you could have gone like Powers Booth, who I also love. You know what, Peter Gallagher is? Peter Gallagher is if you told Kyle MacLachlan to play Dennis Pitzenberger. That's really what it is. All right. I don't even know what we're doing now. Okay, we've done the Taser Watch, Geek Watch, Job Watch. My God, we've gotten to almost everything. We did the trailer. Mm-hmm. We just got the top five left. Is that it? I played ABBA.
I had this one story that we teased, but other than that.
What is the story?
Oh, it was about environmentalists being annoying that they're... dumping contaminated stuff on Hayden Island.
You had a little Freudian slip there. He said environmentalists being annoying, which is also true, by the way. That's just not news. Well, let's do that, and then we'll do the top five.
Okay.
That'll give me a chance to get the top five.
Because this is
racked
important
up here.
News.
Yeah, it's the news that matters.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Environmental groups want to put a stop to the dumping of contaminated dredge material on West Hayden Island. It's the latest in an ongoing battle over the future of the island. For years, environmental groups have wanted to preserve West Hayden Island as a wildlife area. When they learned the Port of Portland was dumping dredge material that contained low levels of contamination, they were outraged. It's a relatively low level of toxicity, but it's absolutely contaminated, said Bob Salinger, conservation director of the Audubon Society of Portland. He believes the port put the material there for one reason. He says, "Our concern is that the Port of Portland has intentionally contaminated West Hayden Island with contaminated sediments from the Portland Harbor Superfund site under the pretense the site was going to be developed. The Port of Portland wants to build marine terminals on 300 acres of West Hayden Island. Last week, Portland City Council gave the port the go-ahead to start planning for the terminals with the goal of maintaining the remaining 500 acres as wildlife habitat. It's a move environmental groups have been fighting. But the Port of Portland said this is nothing new. This is the same type of material here that we've placed there for 75 years, says the guy from Port of Portland. The port maintains the contaminants, lead, zinc, and DDT, were found at very low levels.
The public is in no danger at any time.
Throughout the process, it's been deemed as safe for human and natural resources, he said.
All right. So there you go. There's that story, which just sort of confirms everything we've always suspected. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't forget, on the other side of this top five, we'll, probably wrap things up and whatnot. But the live stream, though, continues unabated, 24 hours a day. We will be anchoring Legion of News, followed by Legion of News from today, followed by this program, back to back to back to back to back. And then over the course of the weekend, we'll slot in slot in some other things. You know, occasionally I'm just sort of tempted to come here on like a Saturday night and just, you know, it for like, you know, whatever.
Be Johnny Fever?
Yeah, just like for whatever nine people might be near their computer or listening or whatever, you know, or have their Twitter or whatever on Saturday night. Just come here and just amuse myself by just playing like an entire Barry Manilow box set. I might do that this weekend at some point. It's like when Lycus came to town at one point. This is years ago when I was at when we were still at the KOTK. And he was in town, I guess, because he did a listener party on a Friday. And then the next Saturday at like, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 o'clock at night, he just he called the board up and he's like, hey, it's Tom Lycus. I'm down the street. I'm going to stop by. And they went, okay. And so the board op just went, like, opened the front door, and Lycus came in. And he just walked into this. He's like, do you mind if I go on the air? The board op's like, okay, whatever. And so it's like 6 o'clock on a Saturday in Portland at the KOTK studios on First. Lycus just walked into the studio, and he just turned down whatever was there. He turned to the microphone and goes, that's Tom Lycus. I'm here at the studio of Portland. If you want to call me now. And with like 5 seconds, like every line lit up. He just felt like walking in and just talking. And then he did the show for like 90 minutes, and then he just walked back to his hotel. So, all right. So without further ado, ladies and gents, here is your top five for Friday on the Rick Emerson Radio
program. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
And without further ado, here is Don Taylor. Don, what is the background of these songs?
Well, these are the top five songs on my iPod/iTunes that I keep going back to. When I'm feeling a little cranky, a little down. Songs that put me in a jovial, happy mood.
It's just like when we finished the program and I said, that show sucked. There was nothing good about that show. It's
exactly.
Terrible.
Then I go home.
Awful.
I put my headphones on and I play happy music. And again, it changes as, you know, over time. But right now, lately, these have been the songs I've been going back to over
and you
and
say
over
to
again.
Yourself, there's a better world somewhere.
Say, oh, that Rick Emerson.
Stupid Rick. Stupid jerk.
He didn't like me. He didn't like the show.
Dumb over-host.
Not going good.
All right. These are Dawn Taylor's top five songs that she uses to cheer herself whenever she's feeling just the slightest bit blue. And I know you actually gave me my own copy of this so I can be prepared for them. How it's not actually working because I don't actually
I, on the other hand, will not give you a hard time about that as you have oft times given me when
I'm
not looking.
That's a lie.
And then you make me cranky and I have to go play my happy songs.
All right, here we go. Okay, I am prepared now.
Okay.
All right, these are Dawn Taylor's top five songs she uses to cheer herself. Dawn Taylor?
My honorable mention is Ida Maria, Oh My God.
I don't know the song.
She's a Norwegian singer.
Find a cure for my life, find a cure. Find a cure for my life, find a cure.
There's also a version of this that she did with Iggy Pop, but I don't have that one handy.
What is her deal? Who is she?
No, she's Norwegian. I don't really know a lot.
She's from Barcelona.
She's Norwegian. She did an album. This was a big hit, I think, in Europe. And there's this really awesome version of this with Iggy Pop that was like an extra cut on one of his CDs or something. So it's really just more of the same. But this is just one of those things that, for some reason...
It's an energetic song.
Yeah, and it kind of pops me up a bit.
All right. These are Dawn Taylor's top five songs she uses to cheer herself when feeling low. Dawn Taylor?
Number five, The Dickies, The Banana Splits Theme.
Well, it's doubly cool, A, because it's The Dickies, and B, because it's the tra-la-la song.
Yeah.
You know who's the biggest Dickies fan? And I think because he spent a lot of time in L.A. is Tim Riley.
Really?
Which is strange. You don't really picture Tim sitting here listening to the Dickies.
Yeah, if you grew up in L.A. during a certain time period and you were listening to a certain type of music, yeah, had to just love the Dickies. They also do an awesome, did a great cover of the theme from Gigantor.
Really?
Yeah.
They did the, they also did the Killer Clowns from Outer Space theme.
Yes. Yes, they did. Okay, see, look at you sitting over there smiling. Isn't just, this making you feel cheerful?
No, it's just adorable, though, because if you're telling me that these songs are what you use to pick yourself up, and so I'm picturing you, and I know that you are, you know, 25 years of age, but I'm picturing you twirling around your bedroom like Angela Chase in My So-Called Life.
That's exactly what happens.
Where she's listening to Blister in the Sun and, like, dancing in front of a mirror.
That's exactly it. Or, like, in Ghost World. Dancing to the Bollywood song.
Yes.
Yes.
You guys are good. Look at that.
These are Dawn Taylor's top five songs with which to cheer herself. What is number four?
Number four is Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, Mr. Heat Miser.
Did you hear that fantastic segue we did right there?
I did.
I've never heard this version of this song.
I'll miss the white Christmas. I'll miss the cool. I'll miss the icicle. I'll miss the 10 below. Friends call me Snow Miser. Whatever I touch turns to snow in my clutch. I'm too much.
So I guess kind of like with the Dickies song, it's like, it's a great song. It's a upbeat kind of a fun song. It also gives you that kind of childhood memory sort of thing.
Well, it's a holiday song.
But also, you know, it's Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Friends call me Snow Miser. Whatever I touch turns to snow in my clutch. I'm too much. I never wanna know a day that's over 40 degrees. I'd rather have it 30, 20 than 5. Let it freeze.
Ooh, it's cold in here, baby. Much too cold in here for you now. Come on.
That is pretty great. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. These are the top five songs that Dawn Taylor uses to cheer herself up. That was number four. Number three is what?
George Baker selection, Little Green Bag.
Is he? No, that's he's not the same guy that did. No, I'm conflating two things. I'm conflating what's his name, Rafferty, and Baker Street.
Ah, yes.
I don't know.
And of course, there's, you know, that inescapable Reservoir Dogs connection with the song anymore. But this is just such a great song.
On the track for a little green bag. I gotta find just a guy or I'm losing.
Is this one of the things that Stephen Wright is playing on the radio?
Yes.
It's actually
well, this is also what's playing when you first see the crew walking down the street towards the camera.
Really, when he's doing the formation shot, is this what's playing?
Yeah.
It, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday, actually, because we played the Pulp Fiction, when he shoots, oh, man, a Sharp Marvin in the face.
Yes.
As I was editing that yesterday morning, you know what I realized? Is it's been probably... I probably haven't watched Pulp Fiction in over a decade. And I mean...
It holds up.
I have no doubt that
really
it does.
It really does.
I have no doubt about that. It's that's my thing is I have no doubt about it. And I'm sure the Reservoir Dogs does too, and it's probably the same amount of time. I think I sensed, rather than... I don't think I ever thought it in these words, but I think I sensed on some level that that's a movie like watching Arrested Development... Where you just can't do it very often, or it just loses its, you know. That's a movie where I think it is easy to watch it so often that you forget how great it is.
Yeah.
So I think I'm waiting until I feel like I really have to see it again. But I was thinking how odd it is. But here's the other thing. is that it doesn't seem like it's been 10 years since I've seen either of those movies. And you know why? It's because every 15 seconds you pass some guy in the street who references it or who quotes it in some way. Or like with this, where every time I hear like Stuck in the Middle or something,
yeah,
I forget that I haven't seen that movie in a decade. It is sort of relentlessly cheery. Bum, bum.
Look back on the track for a little green back. I gotta find just the cat or I'm losing my mind. Out of sight in the night, out of sight in the day. Looking back on the track, gonna do it my way. Looking back on the track for a little, little green back. I gotta find.
This is, in my head, this is like, this is accompanied by some montage of you cooking something. And it's like you're preparing, and it's like you're sort of doing like a, you're doing like a Carrie Russell in Waitress sort of a thing where you're making a pie or something to this song.
Except I would make a real pie, not a fake pie like those pies.
Stupid Carrie Russell.
I love that movie Waitress, but man, those pies would not work.
There's a, you know, actually in this movie Rid of Me that I saw, the Westby film that I saw last night, there's a strong, not, it's not like a cooking film, but there's a recurring theme of her cooking a lot, of the Katie O'Grady character cooking quite a lot. And it's that thing, you know, as much as I'm not like a food guy, when it's photographed in the right way, food on film just looks beautiful. You really see why that term food porn exists, because it is just like it's like the most beautiful thing to look at. These are the top five songs Dawn Taylor uses to cheer herself up. Number two.
Number two is Nellie McKay, The Dog Song.
Another song I don't believe I know.
Nellie McKay is this awesome recording artist, stand-up comedian. She did Broadway a couple of years ago. She was in the Three Penny Opera. And this is a song that's an ode to adopting a dog from the pound, basically. My love is lonely
and blue. You and I are very different people.
Yeah, I was sad as a sailor. I was an angry one, too. Then there was you appeared when I was entangled with you.
Okay, so now we have to balance this, though. On Monday, you should do the top five songs to which you brood.
Okay, I can do that.
Did you ever do the top five teenage sulking songs?
No, I didn't.
Really? How is that possible?
I don't know.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I remember when you did that.
Because we did it with like everybody on Earth. We had like the janitor do it. I never asked because I assumed that you would have been like the second person we would have asked to do it. That's insane. We'll have to do that at some point.
Yeah, but on Monday I'll do my my brooding songs.
Yeah, as here, like in your you know, in your current life.
I was thinking about doing my top five breakup songs because I do have like songs that I brooded to after breaking up with different guys,
right.
And they were very different and very specific.
Okay, on Monday you should do the top five songs to which you brood.
Okay.
This is
my
really
love was tragic
interesting.
And sad.
These are the top five songs which Dawn Taylor uses to cheer herself up. Number one.
Number one is Les Paul and Mary Ford, I'm Sitting on Top of the World.
I'm sitting on top of the world, just rolling along, rolling along.
You might be surprised to hear that I listen to a lot of Django Reinhardt and Les Paul for some reason.
I'm just saying that when I hear this, I almost, it's like I'm incapable of stopping it for some reason. I just see those white on black Woody Allen credits rolling in my head for some reason, starring Dawn Taylor, produced by Charles Joffe.
Yeah, you can imagine a montage of me heading out on a road trip.
On a bicycle. Stopping by the drugstore. Buying a comic book.
It's just, all of the Les Paul and Mary Ford stuff is so amazing because he was this pioneer of multi-track recording. But the thing is, like, you know, we didn't have the editing capabilities. He didn't have the editing capabilities we have today. So they would have to just record new tracks over existing tracks. And if they screwed it up, they screwed
up
everything that they had done before.
Yeah.
So this is all just them coming back in and recording again and again and again over the same piece of tape to get this.
Well, that's one of the reason. That's one of the reasons why those recordings, I won't say they sound better, but they sound so distinctive because when you record over the same piece of tape over and over and over again, you know, you're always, you're kind of, well, depending on how you do it, you're losing a generation, or you're slowly removing the oxide from the tape, and so you get this sort of squashed, warm sound to it. That it gives it kind of that monophonic sound that people talk about when they hear about Phil Spector and things. And
yeah.
Which you just, I'm not saying it's better or worse, but you just don't have that now with digital. There's so much clarity and separation. It's a different sound.
And people, Les Paul is acknowledged as a genius.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The thing is, Mary Ford was a genius as well, because he acknowledges that all of these vocal arrangements were entirely her.
Ah, that's awesome. Fantastic. Hey. Well done, Don Taylor.
See, don't you feel more cheerful now?
I really do. Despite my best efforts, I feel that my mood has lifted. And I really dug in my heels there, but it just wasn't working out for me. Let's see if I can maybe end with this, if this in fact wants to play. This is about 45 seconds. This is a little taste. This is a modern version of it, I believe. This is not the version that they would have performed in terms of the instrumentation. I do believe this is a song that would be familiar to how many people are in your Mormon Book Club?
There's six of us total.
And so I believe this is a song they might be familiar with. Let's see if I can get this to play here. This is a sort of alternative rock version of this song. The soundtrack to a movie called Singles Ward.
Seriously?
Yeah. Ah. It's actually not such a terrible film. The Mormons are brilliant because they got their own cottage industry of everything. And there's a movie called Singles Ward, which is a sort of their, it's like their attempt to make like a sort of a, I wouldn't say swingers, but I mean, you know, that kind of like, you know, kind of funny, sort of slightly edgy in an unthreatening way, young people looking for love and making pop culture references. But the brilliant, and that followed on the heels. There's this guy who is, I swear to Christ, he is known as the Mormon Kevin Smith. I forget his name, but he's sort of their version of Kevin Smith, where he was this young kind of considered sort of an outlaw filmmaker, wrote, produced, directed this movie called God's Army, which is it is the story of like four missionaries and it just and what happens to them over the course of a year. And it's just endless sequences of like young guys sitting around talking about what passes for pop culture in a Mormon film, but in a way that I think had not been done before. And on the heels of that, though, they just made this whole huge crush of films for Mormon youth, including this movie, Singles Ward. And the gimmick of Singles Ward, the big selling gimmick they used, was that they took all of these songs that, I mean, it really is shameless in a way that, like, even we Gentiles appreciate. That the Mormon church took this, they have all of these songs for kids that they learn in primary, which is Sunday school. And so this movie, Singles Ward, they took all of these songs that you would have grown up singing in the Mormon church, and they did alternative rock versions of them for the soundtrack, which is brilliant because, A, it makes a lot of money for the Mormon church, and, B, it sets the film apart from something like your Mormon parents might have watched. So there you go. All right.
So awesome. I have a question for you real quick. Somebody brought something up in the text box.
Yes.
Our good friends, Kurt and Fatboy, are doing their midnight movie tonight at the Baghdad, Jurassic Park.
Uh-huh.
Doors open at 10 o'clock. Someone asked if we were going to be there, and I know that I am going to attempt it. I do have Mormon Book Club this evening, so if I get done with book club and can scamper home, grab my husband, and get to the Baghdad, I will be there. So I want to know if you yourself might be dropping.
Well, I will say that here's the thing about that is that I always confuse because it's the first Friday, right?
Right.
And so whenever it's the first Friday, I always think it's still the last Friday. And so like tonight, if you had asked me when it was, I would have gone, it's next week. So I never, ever, ever, ever get it right. I never know. For some reason, I'm always a week behind. But it's only with those guys and that thing. So I didn't know about that. That being said, Well, I don't know, actually, because here's why. Because don't get me wrong, I love Dre. When's the last time you saw Jurassic Park?
Well, I just saw it on Tuesday because I recorded. Again, if you go to CourtandBatBoy.com, I believe you can download a commentary to listen as you watch Jurassic Park, either tonight on your iPod or in the future. And I did a commentary with Court and Fat Boy and Mike Russell of the Oregonian and Mr. David Walker and Eric Hendrickson of the Mercury. And we all sat around and talked about Jurassic Park.
Now, here's the thing about that movie is that, first of all, it really holds up. I mean, the stuff—it's
very good. It's from Spielberg's classic period.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like the things about Jurassic Park that were good then are still good now, and the effects are still really, really amazing. That's why it was just, you know,
the effects really hold up.
They really do.
And there's a lot of dinosaurs running around in broad daylight, too, and they really hold up. And I'd say if you are a younger person listening to this and perhaps you have never seen Jurassic Park on the big screen.
Shame!
You might want to pop down there. Doors open, I think, at 10, movies at 11, and it's like $3 to get in, but there's pizza and beer.
So you all really ought to go. Here's the reason why I am I may or may not go. It has nothing to do with the movie or the anything. Here's the thing, is that Lara has never, and it's my failure, she's never seen Jurassic Park. And I know that is my failure as a man, and as a husband, and as a human, and as an embracer of pop culture. I'm doing the best I can. I tried 3 times to get her to watch The Godfather, and the 3rd time she fell asleep, I was like, "F it, I'm never attempting this again." So that's gone on the discard pile for her. She'd never seen, you know, like Star Wars. I'm bringing her up to speed.
Yeah.
She has not seen Jurassic Park, and I'm, in the best way possible, I don't know if that's the right way to get her to see it the first time. But see, the thing is, if I go see it without her, then there'll be punishment. So I got to see if
she's... But you've seen it before, so it's not like you're seeing something new for the first time that she's never seen.
No, but I'm saying I don't know... No, but I'm saying I don't know if that's the right way for her to see it for the first time.
Oh, with people around going, "Woo, dinosaurs! You know, give me more pizza."
Yeah, and people going, "It's Newman! Woo, Newman's dead!"
Jeff Goldblum has no shirt on.
Yeah, I mean, that's, Or inevitably a bunch of guys behind me going, I don't know. It seems like he's just doing this thing the entire film. Or whatever. So I'm unclear. It's like when they showed maybe it was Aliens. And I was like, that's not the right place to see that for the first time, maybe. Only because you don't want a guy to spoil something or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe. I'll see what she thinks about that. If I can avoid punishment for going by myself, or if she feels like seeing it for the first time there, then maybe. So I'd say I give it maybe 60-44 at this point, 60-40 in favor. But who knows? It's you got to keep me abreast of that sort of thing. Because the other thing is, like, they're over – well, see, here's the other thing about the Midnight movie. Because I do feel bad that I'm going to see this stuff. Because I dig those guys and I want to support their stuff. And also, a lot of times it's movies I haven't ever seen on the big screen. Sometimes they'll show stuff that I never get to show. Like, they did The Godfather thing and I'd never seen it on the big screen. So I was like, absolutely. But before, we were across the hall from each other and then later actually in the same studio. But now it's like,
now we're on the other side of the bridge.
Yeah, like we're on one part of town, and they're on the other part of town. And so it doesn't work. So I'm often not cognizant of those things if they're not put directly in front of me. I'm not that bright, Dawn. That's kind of the thing.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so there you go. Join us next week when our guests will include Ryan White of the Oregonian and I believe, although I cannot swear to this, I believe Mr. Peter Carlin will be joining us either next week or the week after that to make Dawn uncomfortable. So there you go. Don't forget, the show will be encoring here in a short while following the Legion of News encore, and we'll do that back-to-back-to-back-to-back. Speaking of Kevin Smith, this weekend we're going to put up a Kevin Smith interview. That'll be playing in the archives at the live stream as well. Rick Emerson Show comes to you live at each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. The news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from you. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Friday, August 6, 2010, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. After a brief musical interlude, Legion of News encore is followed by this encore. Thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all Monday. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.